reality extraction. Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. I utilize logic, intellect, and magic to methodically autonomize, vivisect, analyze, examine, study, scrutinize, and extract an essence of reality from a fog of illusion and confusion. You can find me on Studio B every Thursday, 1700 hours Pacific Time. That's 8 p.m. Eastern. No topic taboo, no subject too strange. I strive to take a neutral standpoint during the dissection of the topic at hand. That's Reality Extraction with Mr. Rowe on Revolution Radio.
Oscar's freeze. That's his cerebral cortex looking for an answer it doesn't have.
See? Even your brain knows your screw.
That is filling with adrenaline right now. Whether you know it or not, your heart's beating fast. It's getting a little harder to breathe. The neurobiological system is telling it to run, but your knees are too weak to move.
Fear is not real. The only place that fear can exist is in our thoughts of the future. It is a product of our imagination, causing us to fear things that do not at present and may not ever exist. That is mere insanity. Do not misunderstand me. Danger is very real, but fear is a choice. We are all telling ourselves a story.
You're listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. 100% listener-supported radio. Reporting the danger. Unafraid. Right here, where information never sleeps. Revolution. Revolution. Radio!
Bars are all closed. Is it time for bed? Hell no, it's time for after hours. Here's your host,
for a destination,
Chairman.
I realized quickly when I knew I should that the world was made up of this brotherhood of man, or whatever that means.
Everybody, it's After Hours, and this is Jer Bear, and you listen to Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, in our 11th year, strictly listener-supported, and we're grateful for that, you the listeners out there, much love, and we're still existing with about 80 hosts, I think. I don't know the count of it, but welcome, and hello, everybody, and I'll open up the phone lines. You guys know how to get in here. I might talk a little bit about, it's a Nova PBS, believe that. It's a public broadcasting system vid about the cannabis question. And there's a lot of answers and questions about cannabis. I've been kind of looking over in the last hour or so, a couple other vids about cannabis. So I thought I'd bring that up. Also, I think I read about the reptilian aliens and the Council of 13 Royal Families. I don't know if I brought that up last night. Oh, I did drink about the Pinder. I wish I would have found that tape that I didn't look deep enough for it about, let's see if I'm coming in here too. Also, yes I am, so hello to the chat room, and hello to Melanie, Zog, Batsman, thank you David Narara. Well, I'm hearing backdrop now, why? Shouldn't. Oh, I did drink about, shouldn't be, I just turn the volume. Anyway, hello everybody out there. Jesuits and Christianity are like maggots in a rotten apple. They are no good. They're like part of knowing about, they're one of the secret societies. It's a trip. That's a trip. But anyway, I might do this thing about cannabis. Also, if you guys want to get a touch of Las Vegas, there's a few videos these guys are doing around the strip and stuff that are pretty cool. I was watching it, watching one of them in front of the Bellagio, the big fountain and stuff, and it's pretty trippy. Just something I brought up. Local news, I haven't checked it out yet. I don't know. But anybody wants to come in here and ride shotgun, they're welcome to. And let me get a sip of water and I'll be right back.
In the morning you go running for the man who stole your water. And you fight till he is dawning, but they catch you at the border. And the mourners are all singing as they drag you by your feet. But the hangman is in hanging, and they put you on the street. Yeah, go back, Jack, do it again. Wheel turning round and round. You go back, Jack, do it again.
After hours? Do it after hours? Why, certainly. Anyway, I lit me up a smoke, and drinking some H2O. How y'all doing out there? Hope you're doing all right. Let me see here. What am I going to do tonight? Talk about. There's an article here about Epstein. I read a little bit of, get started here. It's when all media was exposing Epstein, again, excuse me, it was when alternative media was exposing Epstein, ABC and MSS was covering it up. Who's the real fake news? This was written in 2019 of November. One of the largest stories in the news this week was the ABC's anchor, excuse me, who was recorded on a hot microphone ranting about how the network suppressed her story on Jeffrey Epstein and his ties to the elite 3 years ago. While the admission was certainly noteworthy, it should come as no surprise. Over the past few years, the mainstream media in general has refused to report on Epstein's ties to current and past government officials, Hollywood insiders, and even royalty. Now, as the Epstein didn't kill himself memes storm the internet, it has all of a sudden become cool to finally talk about the insidious about this insidious group of power elite predators. However, those of us in the alternative media have been talking about this stuff for years. Before it was cool, and we were called conspiracy theorists for doing so. While the mainstream media was shouting down the pizza crowd, TFTP, and others were reporting on the real child sex trafficking conspiracy involving Epstein and his friends like the Clintons. As we reported in 2016, flight logs showed that Bill Clinton allegedly took numerous flights on the Lolita Express, Epstein's private jet, you know, to Orgy Island, Epstein's private island, you know, in the Caribbean, to engage in sex with underage girls. Epstein is also tied to the current president, Donald Trump. Indeed, prior to taking the White House, billionaire Donald Trump dished out praise for Epstein back in 2002, telling New York Magazine, for an article in Hindsight, peculiarly titled Jeffrey Epstein's International Money Man of Mystery. I've known Jeff for 15 years. Terrific guy. He's a lot of fun to be with. It is even said that he likes beautiful women as much as I do, as many of them are on the younger side. No doubt about it, Jeffrey enjoys his social life. When we were reporting on these provable facts years ago, the mainstream media was suppressing them. Even Prince Andrew was tied to the convicted pedophile. In fact, one piece of evidence submitted during a lawsuit against Epstein, last year with a photo of Prince Andrew with his arm around underage victim Virginia Roberts, who claims that she was both forced to have sex with Epstein and she was loaned out to perform sex acts on his friends. The photo resurfaced last year during the trials, yet it was entirely ignored by mainstream. Coincidentally, any ties to the royal family have been ignored by the mainstream despite the evidence. Why is that? The palace found out that we had her whole allegations about Prince Andrew and threatened us a million different ways. Amy Roback, Good Morning America co-host and breaking news anchor at ABC, was recorded saying on a hot mic in the now viral video. ABC was taking marching orders from the royal family to cover for a convicted pedophile. Those of us in the trenches of alternative media were putting out reports left and right. The Miami Herald is arguably one of the largest purveyors and investigators in the Epstein corruption case, putting out bombshell after bombshell over the last few years. Sadly, however, most of it was ignored. As TFTP has reported, I don't know what that means, has reported, Epstein is a convicted child molester and sexually abused no less than 40 underage girls. Despite this fact, Alexandria Acosta protected him while serving as a U.S. attorney in Florida. Instead of going to prison for life, as he should have, considering the evidence against him, Epstein only got 13 months and was allowed to stay in the Palm Beach County Jail in his own private cell where he was allowed to leave the prison 6 days a week for work release. Instead of being investigated for letting this convicted pedophile off with a wrist slap, Acosta was appointed by Trump to Secretary of Labor. During his appointment hearing in 2017, Acosta defended the way he handled the Epstein case. At the end of the day, based on the evidence, professionals within a prosecutor's office decide that a plea that guarantees that someone goes to jail, that guarantees that someone registered generally, and that guarantees other outcomes is a good thing, he said. As the alternative media was screaming from the rooftops, literally we did a podcast on this last year, that man let a pedophile off with a wrist slap and was then appointed to a high position in the government. The mainstream media ignored it once again. Only after Epstein was arrested did Acosta's role become something the mainstream media would talk about. The coverage almost immediately led to this pedophile's helper's resignation. When the Hollywood Me Too movement blew up, the mainstream media focused solely on a few people while ignoring Epstein's ties to any of it. However, pinning away with permanent information were the folks at anti-media showing the connections. When Epstein was being sued in federal court last year, the mainstream was again silent. But the TFTP contributor, founder of the Conscience Resistance, and Houston mayoral candidate Derek Bowes was in Florida standing in front of Epstein's mansion trying to get this information out to the public. Yet again, the algorithms, the fact checkers, and thought controllers acted almost in unison to silence these platforms. A month later, the TFTP published Brosi's extensive investigative work. Our entire social media network across Facebook and Twitter, consisting of nearly 7 million followers, was surreptitiously wiped off the face of the internet. Can't say that word right. Surreptitiously wiped off the face of the internet. None of the information we have put out in regard to Epstein over the past few years has been wrong. Alternative media had their finger on the pulse of Epstein's corruption for years. Yet we have been showed into the fringes by the mainstream. Coincidence? Sadly, however, although it appears that they are finally reporting on the Epstein corruption, the mainstream media is still pussyfooting all over it. They are more concerned with Epstein's death in jail than the actual connections to these elite child traffickers, many of whom are still free. Whitney Webb with Mint Press News has been following the Epstein case down into the deepest crawls of the establishment and has been asking hard questions like, like how the hell is Ghislaine Maxwell, who is alleged to have helped Epstein traffic these children, still walking around a free person? If you want a true glimpse into how deep the rabbit hole goes, you can take a look at the depth coverage here. The sleight of hand tactics employed by the mainstream are becoming more and more apparent as we progress through the times. It is no surprise that they have earned the nickname Dinosaur Media. Let's hope that those who help to protect society's worst, who victimize and prey on innocent children, will one day find their platforms used for this protection. Extinct, just like the dinosaurs. That platform so we can hang them, that bastards. So that's a little bit about that. Am I going to say anything more? I don't know. I think I did talk about Pindar. I wanted to find about Pindar. Shit. What else do I got? I forget his name. The blonde dude that goes around, and he did that thing with Pinder. Oh, she talks to him. Gosh, I can't find him. Maybe. Anyway, hello everybody. Anybody want to call in? 702-605-4436. 702-605-4436 or Jer Bear Laveau in Skype. Welcome to call in. The lines are open. Well, I'm search here, dilly dallying. I don't think I could find it. Damn it. I'm just seeing some music I want to play and I got to behave myself. Always, always. I don't know. I saw watching some old Twilight Zone stuff. Here's something from a host that used to be here, Helena. See you. Helena Phoenix, she makes a pretty good video sometime back. I'm not even sure when she did it. Oh, 10 years ago, 2012. And I put it in the chat room showing It's War. That's the name of the song. It's a trippy song, but God bless Helena and I hope she's doing well. I'll play a little more here.
I'm fighting to my lover and a lover and a fighter. Every day I'm put to the test. So much confusion. Some people are jealous. Maybe my mission to fight them and positive sight them. The time now that people are playing. No one's uniting. Now we're all fighting. Cause people are stupid.
That's a trippy song. I helped her produce when she first started here, and gosh, that was 10 years ago, I guess. She had some good shows. She brought some other hosts here that aren't here no more that kind of caught us, part of us. But anyway, that's a shout out to Helena Phoenix. It's for now, you know now. I've been trying to think about something to take you guys back that are listening that were around when I was around, and I found this. I've been wanting to play this. I just kind of stumbled on it again about Jim Morrison. I was doing some, I've talked about Carly Simon. Oh, just saw her name. Gosh, I always forget her name. Joni Mitchell. Mitchell. Joni Mitchell now, still alive. And she's suffering some type of disease. I don't know. But she's still, where she lost her voice. And I think how to talk a little bit. But she's recovering from it. She's quite a woman. And she's born in 83. I mentioned this last night, I think, on After Hours last night. So she's about 87, something like that. 88. I don't know. But I wish Darren was around. I appreciate him as a good running shotgun with me. Good intellectual mind. I think he's just not too much younger than me, but God bless him too. All you guys that kind of know me or don't want to know me, not want to know me, here at the station, you know. I don't know. I needed some help last night. I couldn't get it when Lauren came back in the chat. I wanted her to be trusted. I didn't get no help. I was ignored. I can't trust people no more, so I kind of like did a boo boo. But anyway, that's another story. To each his own. But anyway, let me chill my head here a little bit and see if we get some people to call in. And here's a story. Yes, I'll put it in the chat room. Story I want to kind of hear and play it again some. Play it again some. Little thing about 3 hours for magic. Let's see what we got here.
The seeds of Jim's departure were planted much earlier with The Doors' biggest hit. Today, more than a decade after Jim Morrison's tragic death, the Morrison mystique is of greater interest than ever before.
Let me see if I'm coming in here. Let's see what we got here.
Much earlier with The Doors' biggest hit.
Okay, so it's coming in. Pardon the stall. Let's hear about Jimmy.
I'm Scott Penny, welcoming you to Jim Morrison, 3 Hours for Magic, a unique look at the man behind the myth, James Douglas Morrison. This special has been developed in conjunction with the Delilah book, An Hour for Magic, a collection of Morrison poetry and photographs, compiled by Jim's longtime friend and personal photographer, Frank Lisiandro.
Riders of the storm, into this house we're born, into this world we're thrown, like a dog without a bone and actor out alone.
Frank Lisiandro.
None of us ever realized that he was probably one of the major forces in American poetry while he was alive. Poets knew it, other poets knew it, but we didn't, his close friends. You know, it's sometimes difficult to see something that's right in front of your eyes.
If you give this man a ride, sweet memory will die. Killer on the road, yeah.
For the first time ever, Jim Morrison.
I have a vision of America seen from the air, 28,000 feet and going fast. A one-armed man in a Texas parking labyrinth. A burnt tree like a giant primeval bird in an empty lot in Fresno. And elevators filled with citizens and miles of hotel corridors.
We strongly emphasize that all rights to this material are copyright James Douglas Morrison Publishing and may not be used outside the context of this show.
Girl, you gotta love your man. Girl, you gotta love your man. Take him by the hand.
One of the more disputed aspects of The Doors is their alleged breakup following the L.A. Woman album. However, the seeds of Jim's departure were planted much earlier with The Doors' biggest hit, Light My Fire, as former Doors manager Bill Siddons explains.
Jim had, at that point in time, decided to disappear, which for me was the first time he disappeared, became completely incommunicado, was gone for, I don't remember now, but 2 to 4 days. No one had any idea where he was, what happened to him. And all of a sudden, this thing was, here it is. Buick is offering you, I can't remember, but it was many thousands of dollars. I mean, it was close to $100,000 to use Light My Fire in their song, and it was going to be Come On Buick, Light My Fire. And Robbie, having been really the writer of the song, I felt was the guy to make the decision, even though Jim sang it. It was Robbie's song. And for some reason that I don't remember to this day, it was a high-pressure, you got to give an answer now situation. It wasn't, we can wait till Jim comes back. So together we all decided, well, what the hell, why not? No, you know, we were all teenagers. I mean, the guy, you know, Ray was the old guy at 25, but so we decided to go for it. And Jim came back a couple days after that and found out about it and just freaked out. He just thought it was the tackiest thing in the world to do with The Doors' music. Subsequently, at least, I figured out that he was absolutely right. It was just bad judgment. But Jim knew for what The Doors were doing, what The Doors meant to people, that it was the wrong thing to do. Obviously, it didn't destroy their career, but it was important to him, and it created a real anger in him that anyone would do that to him. That created a stronger division between Jim and the other three Doors. He felt betrayed by them because of it. No one did it to betray him. We did it because we didn't know what to do, and it was free money being dangled in front of us.
Corky Corson, the father of Jim's wife, Pamela, continues.
After the first two albums, they were at their peak, and Pam and Jim were over in England. They came back, and Jim found, he was notified, that they were selling this song, and without him. And this was sort of led to the breakup of The Doors. But anyway, let's go on. Came back and he found this was happening. He was mad as hell. And so he called Ray and he said, hell, this song will be a classic. We sell it for a damned ad. That'll be the end of it. Nobody will ever do it anything. And he was just mad as hell and he hung up like that. Pam, as she was telling him, said, well, Jim, he's your best friend. Or, and they were just sort of violent. He was, and one of the few times she'd ever seen him mad. And, but anyway, he hung up that thing, and then Thomas said, well, what do you think they're going to do? He said, don't worry. They're not going to let their little goldfish swim away.
This controversy continues with Doors guitarist Robbie Krieger telling the group's version of the story.
We never really broke up. I mean, when Jim went to Paris, he, you know, it was understood that it was going to be a long vacation for everybody. But there was no talk of breaking up the doors. You know, we had finished our contract with Elektra as far as albums go, and we were going to take a long vacation for sure, but we didn't say, okay, let's break up the group. You do a solo album, you do a solo album, and whatever. I never said that. In fact, Jim had called John Densmore shortly before his death and said, hey, how's the album doing and stuff, you know? Yeah, we might have to come back and do another one pretty soon or whatever, you know.
Ironically, the recording of the Doors' last studio album, L.A. Woman, was an extremely satisfying experience for Jim, as American Prayer co-producer John Haney explains.
My impression of the situation was is that they were enjoying the recording process, that they were enjoying the results more than any album they had made in their memory. When I say them, I underline Jim Morrison were enjoying the recording process more than they had in years and years and years. But of course, after L.A. Woman was completed, at that point, Jim quit the band. Now, I believe everybody in the band will tell you that before Jim left for Paris, that he said that he didn't really mean it and that he was planning on coming back and rejoining the band. Personally, I find this a total myth. I find this to be a myth that's been fabricated for the Doors' egos. I don't find any truth in it. Jim never alluded to it. He never inferred that he ever wanted to be a Door again. It was very important to him that the world would perceive him as a poet, not as the punk kid rock star. That's why when he left the Doors, that he signed a contract with Elektra Records to specifically make a poetry album that said Jim Morrison and had no allusion to the Doors on it whatsoever. Well, it was an executed contract. And then went a step further and executed a contract with me to co-produce the record with Jim. And then died.
Robbie Krieger.
Well, I don't know what he'd signed, but he did start, you know, he put his poetry down on tape, which is what we used on American Prayer. And he was planning to come out with some sort of an album with it. But it's not to preclude Doors, you know.
Who are our friends? Are they sullen and slow? Do they have great desire? Or are they one of the multitude who walk doubting their impossible regret?
Bill Sittens continues.
I was in the meeting in which Jim announced to us that he was moving to Paris and had no intention of continuing anything or not continuing anything. There was never a question that Jim Morrison was, from the day that L.A. Woman was finished, done with the Doors as an obligation. He finished recording all the albums under the contract. He finished touring. There were no plans to tour. There were no anything. And in fact, while Jim was in Paris, Ray Manzarek, Robbie Krieger, and John Densmore rehearsed with different singers to find a new singer because they knew that Jim might never come back. He never said, I quit, the band is over, forget you, it'll never happen again. He also never said, I'll be back in 3 months. He just said, I don't know who I am. I don't know what I'm doing. I don't know what I want to do. I'm gone. Don't count on me. Goodbye.
Former Doors keyboardist Ray Manzarek.
It just wasn't the same without Jim. I felt that we were just lost, man. Mm-hmm. It was impossible for us to continue as the Doors. We should have recorded those albums as Manzarek, Densmore, and Krieger. It would have made a lot more sense and said, hey, we used to be the Doors. We're not the Doors anymore. The Doors are Jim Morrison, Ray Manzarek, Robbie Krieger, John Densmore. That's the Doors. Take away any part, and it's not the Doors anymore. And, man, we lost the number one part, the lead singer himself, the word man. And it was impossible to continue to be the Doors. So after the second album, I just said, hey, man, let's put it to bed, you guys. Let's close the Doors. There's no sense continuing. We're not the Doors. The Doors are four people. The Doors are not three people. And we could never replace Jim Morrison, so let's just give up.
Meanwhile, back at the beginning, Jim Morrison, in this rare surviving interview, explains the Doors' origins.
Ray and I both got out of school, and we're living down at the beach. And I guess he was having the same trouble I was trying to get into film. So we ran into each other by accident one day, and I showed him some songs I'd been writing, and because he was a musician, we talked about music together, and he liked them. And so from that, we started thinking about forming a group.
You know, the day destroys the night. Night divides the day. Try to run, try to hide. Break on through to the other side. Break on through to the other side. Break on through to the other side, yeah.
I'll stop it right there. This is Jared playing this whole 3 hours for Magic Jim Morris special. So I hope you're enjoying it. And this is Revolution Radio Freedom Slips. I'm just passing this on. Get some callers. 702-605-4436. Some callers. 702-605-4436. I'm anxious to hear from Daryl or Blaze, Darren. My nephew's probably busy, so kind of let him be. He comes twice a month with me, shares things. Hallelujah. But this is Revolution Radio. This is After Hours, and you're listening to a documentary about Jim Morrison's special, 3 hours for Magic. There we go. I want to stop it right there because I was just reading the chat with Lauren. And Lauren, yeah, I did. I see what you wrote. It says, you didn't send me anything. I know, because you got to be trusted. And I couldn't trust you. I asked for some help with a few people that were in the chat room from the staff, and they ignored me. So, sorry about that, Lauren. I tried. But I was going to give you a call. If you're still listening, Lauren, I owe you a call. I can't call you on the live show. But I haven't called you yet, so you'll be expecting a call to check on you and, you know, the loved ones close to you. All right? That's Jer saying it. And also to Crab Cake. She's kind of like into her own. She's kind of like closed herself up. And God bless her. We all have times and tribulations. But I like Crab Cake a lot. She's a good old gal, like just like Lauren, just like Alien Gal, just like some of the fellows I know here too. Thank you. Thank you, guys. Much love to you, too. Crab Cake. So I am coming in. I don't know where to go. I'm tripping here. I hope you know. But I guess I'll play a little more Jim. Well, she was just 17. All right. Anybody want to call in? 702-605-4436. Please, if you're hearing, call in, say hi. Daryl, two L's, call in. Or Darren. You guys should try to call. I should try to call Dory, which probably whipped my ass over the air. Call her in. I get her mixed up with what her number is, but... God bless Dory, too, and we rode Shotgun a lot together, and I produced her show and rode Shotgun, and she ran Shotgun with me like four nights a week, Thursday night, Friday night, Saturday night, Sunday night, back in the day when that's the way it was. But we had the night by four nights a week. Weekends. I gotta give myself a little pinch on the ass and a pat on the back and a nod on the hit in the head. Jim? Alright, Jim, be nice. Okay. Well, let me get back to this and see if we get some callers. 702-605-4436. Call us collect. Call us direct. Just call us. 702-605-4436. I don't want to be like Nighthawk and just get in trouble that way where he just called people in. He'd bring their place and draw them in if they wouldn't say nothing. If I did it, they'd say, why didn't you ask me first? The good old days I'm reminiscing with some Doors. Also, I remember when the Doors were on Ed Sullivan, it was they told Jim to change the song's vocal lyrics to Come On Baby Light My Fire to something else, like something more G-rated, and he said okay, but he didn't listen to him. He still said Come On Baby Light My Fire. And then there's a little scrutiny over that Ed Sullivan show. Recall. I can't remember what year it was. Probably after mid-60s, late-60s. I don't know when Ed Sullivan, but he was on Ed Sullivan. I'll try to Google that. Jim Morrison on Ed Sullivan, Light My Fire, see what I get up. I'll do that in a second. I could talk and listen at the same time.
Frank Lisiandro.
Jim and Ray both have the same story, that on the beach that day in Venice, they both recognized that they had a potential to be a band.
Ray Manzarek.
God, when we first got together on the beach in Venice, man, he was one of the leanest, strongest, handsomest guys I have ever seen. I mean, you talk about a movie star. Wow. God, did he look good. I knew he was going to be a rock star as soon as I saw him, man. He comes walking down the beach, and we had just graduated from UCLA, and he was supposed to go to New York. After we graduated, I said, what are you going to do? He said, I'm going to New York. And I said, well, okay, buddy, see you around sometime. And about 2 months later, I'm on the beach, man, and who comes walking down the beach but Jim Morrison? I said, hey, man, you were supposed to be in New York. What happened? He said, no, I stayed here, man. I decided to stay in L.A., and I've been writing some songs. I said, well, far out, man. I knew he was a poet, but he had never written songs before. And I said, let me hear one of your songs. You know, can you just sing something? Yeah. And he sang Moonlight Drive. Let's swim to the moon. Let's climb through the tide. Penetrate the evening that the city sleeps to hide. And I said, holy cow, man, that's incredible. I've never heard lyrics like that. Ooh, how weird, how strange and spooky. I could hear organ parts and stuff behind that, man. Why don't we get a rock and roll band together? He said, yeah, that's exactly what
I'm... All right, I'm going to jump over to this. It's Ed Sullivan. The Doors, Light My Fire, Ed Sullivan Show, 1967. I'm not sure if this is going to have the controversy about what it said, but it's almost 3 minutes long here. I'll play it for you guys. Hi, Lauren. I'm glad she's heard me what I had to say. You're welcome, Lauren. So this is, I just put it in the chat, and I'll see if this, I don't know if this is the scrutiny with, let me play it. A little interference there, but yeah, so this one doesn't show it because he's saying it. But I'm going down here and looking below. Here's a good documentary here. I'll jump into this about Jimmy. The last 48 hours.
July 2nd, 1971, Paris. Jim Morrison is one of the most famous rock and roll singers in the world.
Start this back, just... Come on, baby, light my fire. It hasn't been lit in a long while. Spark it up without a chuba cha. All right, here we go.
July 2nd, 1971, Paris. Jim Morrison is one of the most famous rock and roll singers in the world.
Quintessential American rock star. It's Jim Morrison.
Jim had them unholy screams from the other side of the universe.
He's also the ultimate sex symbol, the self-styled Lizard King.
At that time, he was the most beautiful man in Hollywood and probably anywhere else on the planet.
Every guy wanted to be him, and every girl wanted to go to bed with him.
But he's a superstar at war with his own dark demons.
He was saying, help me, help me. Nobody knew how to do it. Jim, darkness. Darkness in his writing, a darkness in his life.
And soon, that that darkness will finally consume him. This is the last 24 hours in the life of Jim Morrison. Paris, France, July 2nd, 1971. It's 5 a.m. and Jim Morrison is fast asleep. He's been in Paris for the last 4 months, living in a neighborhood known as the Marais. And in just 24 hours, he'll be dead. Morrison has sublet an apartment at 17 Rue Beautreillis. He's currently with Pamela Courtin, who for the last 5 years has been his on-again, off-again girlfriend. Morrison has come here primarily to escape, both from the pressure of being a rock star and from the possibility of doing jail time in the US, where he's been charged with indecent exposure and public profanity. Jim Morrison is also in Paris in search of artistic inspiration.
So when he went to Paris, it was the idea of here is a new place, a place for artists, a place I can work on my poetry. I mean, what better place to write poetry than in Paris? And I can explore new avenues of my thinking and, in his mind, I think, get himself together.
Paris seems to have had a positive effect on Morrison. He looks healthier and happier than he has in years. But appearances are deceptive. Although he's only 27, years of drug and alcohol abuse have taken their toll. It's a far cry from 4 years earlier, in 1967, when a spry Jim Morrison, accompanied by his band The Doors, roared onto the music scene, determined to conquer the world. Their self-titled debut album was released and became the first of 7 consecutive gold albums recorded by the band. That first album reached number 2 on the Billboard charts, putting The Doors in the same league as The Beatles and The Rolling Stones. Stylistically, The Doors were different from other bands in the California surf and folk rock scene. With their raunchy blues, they stuck out like a sore thumb, or more like a middle finger. The band's road manager was Vince Traynor.
You had to be there. It was electric, it was emotional, it was riveting, fascinating. The dynamics of the Doors' performance simply swept you off your feet.
Someone who got to know Morrison intimately was rock groupie Pamela DeBar.
Never seen anything like it before. It was sensual, it was rude, it was naughty, and it was just so thrilling, really.
The Doors were along those lines, bands that were clearly talented enough and adventurous enough that they did not necessarily follow someone else's formula.
Some more, you know, jazzy.
One of the reasons that the Doors music holds up and that it's still popular today had to do with the fact that they have a classic sound. They didn't adopt the trends of the day. Their sound has that fresh quality to it. And part of it, I think, is the fact that, you know, Jim had something to say. Jim's lyrics communicated things.
They were so visual, beyond the obvious, that they took advantage of their knowledge of and their interest in the visual arts so that they really did break on through and present themselves the way very, very few rock stars of that era had even thought to do. And so I think those are significant contributions from Jim Morrison.
There were a lot of bands of that era that were basically feel-good, happy, hippie love movement type things. Jim had a dangerous quality to his work, and that gave his music a relevance that a lot of people didn't have.
But the Doors' music wasn't half as important as Morrison's killer good looks. This was something that didn't go unnoticed by the VP of their record company, Steve Harris.
I took a good look at him and thought, if this kid could read the phone book on key,
we're all going to be very, very wealthy.
More dangerous than Elvis, prettier than Mick Jagger, it was clear that the band's greatest asset was Jim Morrison.
Jim had this love for movies, and so he would emulate Greta Garbo. He had the look in the eyes of Marlene Dietrich staring you down, shaking his head and his hair like Marilyn Monroe did. He had those masculine traits with the feminine wiles. That's what made Jim unique.
He hypnotized his audiences, screeching like a shaman. He even invented an alter ego, the Lizard King.
He was called the Lizard King for a reason. I mean, he did slither and he did move sort of reptilian-like, and beautiful body, beautiful face.
Jim Morrison became the face of the Doors and the face of sex in rock and roll.
There was a shot that I named the Young Lion. He just looked magnificent in it, and it was used in the Village Voice. The Village Voice said, there is a new sex symbol now, and his name is Jim Morrison.
But although he soaked up the attention, Morrison was unhappy with the focus placed solely on his looks. He saw himself as a writer first and a singer second, desperate to be taken seriously like his poet heroes.
He didn't like the image of the sex symbol. He wanted to be seen as a philosopher, as somebody who could write poetry, who could deliver this poetry to a live audience and have their reaction. That's what Jim wanted.
But what Jim wanted was not what he got. His rock god image eclipsed any chance he had of being taken seriously as a poet. The failure of that dream would eventually chase him to Paris, and in 19 hours, will finally push him over the edge. July 2nd, 1971. Paris, France. It's 11 a.m., and Jim Morrison only has 18 hours left to live. He's come here to Paris, a city rich in arts and inspiration, to write poetry. Sick of our image, he's determined to make his mark as a serious poet. But lately, he's had a bad case of writer's block and is feeling anxious. Alain René, an old friend from Morrison's film days at UCLA, drops by.
Alain René and Jim Morrison had been friends since film school. They did not hang around together a lot during Jim's rock star days. But then when they were in Paris together, they spent a lot of time. And they were good friends. They went way back.
René notices that Morrison is restless. He suggests they go out for a walk and grab some lunch. Jim doesn't look too well at all. They stroll along the colorful Rue des Rosiers, not far from Morrison's apartment. Here, he is rarely recognized and is free from the pressure of playing the rock star. In this bohemian Jewish neighborhood, Jim Morrison seems to fit in perfectly. But throughout most of his life, that has rarely been the case. Jim Morrison was born in the small town of Melbourne, Florida, on December 8, 1943. He and his family were forced to move often because of his father's job as a Navy officer. By the time he turned 16, Jim had already moved 9 times, making it difficult to make friends. Tandy Martin was Jim Morrison's high school sweetheart.
Jim, in the basement of his house, painting. And he stayed down there a lot, painting and writing, and we spent a lot of time down there.
As a teenager, the bright student became more and more disruptive in school and at home. His father, a strict disciplinarian, cracked down hard on Jim.
His parents had no idea what to do with a kid like Jim. No idea. How could they?
Nor could his straight-laced parents understand their son's fascination with the dark underbelly of literature.
I think in the 8th grade, he had a copy of Allen Ginsberg's Howl. You have to put that into perspective. People weren't reading that stuff in the 8th grade. No way. Or 9th grade or 10th grade. Jim was not like other people. He just wasn't like other people.
It's the classic teenage angst. Kids growing up and saying, gee, the world is not all fluffy and nice the way mom and dad have been telling me. There's something dark, something sinister, something dangerous about it. And Jim reflected that in everything he did.
At 19, Morrison's inability to fit in finally got him in trouble with the law.
Some people just rebel because they don't really know what else to do. But Jim was an original, for good or ill.
In Tallahassee, Florida, he was arrested for stealing a helmet from a police car, resisting arrest, and for being drunk and disorderly.
In junior and senior year, I think that's when he started to drink.
In alcohol, Morrison found the perfect fuel to feed the flames of his one-man rebellion against the police, against his strict father, and against everything in between.
Yeah, I think he had a problem with authority. Absolutely.
On reaching adulthood, Jim wasn't done rebelling. His father had expected him to follow in his footsteps and join the military. Instead, in 1964, Jim headed to California and enrolled in UCLA's film program. So deep was the insult that after university, Jim and his father would never speak again.
Jim often referred to his parents as being dead. In his mind, they were dead to him.
When I looked at his bio right after he signed the contract, and it said his parents were deceased. And so that's what I thought.
But in 1967, Harris received a call from a woman claiming to be Jim's mother. He gave her the address of a hotel where her son was staying in New York City.
Later, I told Jim what I did, and he said to me, Steve, do me a favor and just don't ever, ever do that again. I don't want to be in any contact with them at all.
I think the fact that Jim was alienated from his family is reflected a lot in his writing. He writes from a position of being an alienated, lonely person.
Strolling along with his friend Alain René, Jim is momentarily distracted by a cut glass Star of David dangling in a shop window. He decides to buy it for his girlfriend, Pamela Corson. For the successful rock star, money is no object. But just 5 years earlier, he'd been flat broke. In 1965, as a 21-year-old film student in California, Jim Morrison started partying heavily on Venice Beach. Inspired by the wild hippie scene, he spent his days and nights smoking pot, dropping acid, and writing poetry. One day on the beach, he met fellow film student Ray Manzarek.
Ray asked Jim what he'd been up to, and Jim said, well, I've been writing a lot of poetry, and I've been working on some songs. And Ray said, really? Well, sing me one. And Jim sang Moonlight Drive. And Ray said, wow, that's some of the best lyrics I've ever heard for a rock song. How would you like to get together and work on some things? So he got John Densmore, he got Robbie Krieger, they came together, and Jim began to sing.
They called themselves The Doors, based on a poem by one of Morrison's heroes, William Blake. Morrison's own poetry, set to rock music, soon caught the attention of locals. They became the house band at the infamous Whiskey A Go-Go, where their shy lead singer often performed with his back to the audience. But that shyness soon gave way to Morrison's budding love affair with the Spotlight, and the Spotlight loved him right back.
The press loved to write about him, and, you know, he was a good-looking guy.
With Jim Morrison at the wheel, one rock critic dubbed The Doors the missionaries of apocalyptic sex. And Jim made sure he lived up to his sex god image, even backstage before a show with super groupie Pam DeBar.
We found a loft of some kind where they were storing old lighting equipment and stuff. It was somewhere to make out. And I said, I'm making out with Jim Morrison. I'm making out with Jim Morrison. So we did that for a while, and it turned out that the show was starting, and he went, okay. And he went scrambling down the ladder and running out onto the stage.
The special attention given to Morrison began to create tension within the band.
I think there was a little bit of resentment in that they were a unit in the way that they wrote, in the way they created. The songs were credited to all of them. But after a while, Jim got more and more and more of the attention.
This idiot DJ in Los Angeles who began to talk about Jim Morrison and the Doors, as opposed to the Doors, whose lead singer was Jim Morrison. The Doors didn't like it, they tolerated it.
Soon, even Jim Morrison would be unable to tolerate his own rock god image. He would run all the way to Paris to escape it, only to find peace at the ultimate price. July 2nd, 1971. For the last 3 hours, Jim Morrison and his friend Alain René have been strolling through the streets of Paris. Throughout their walk, René has noticed that his friend appears shaky and unwell. Several times, Morrison breaks out in violent spasms and a bad case of the hiccups. The rock star, however, insists he's okay. But in less than 15 hours, he will be far from okay. Around 2 p.m., they reach Place des Vosges, the city's famous Renaissance Square. René feels that a little food may help settle his friend. But throughout the afternoon, the hiccup attacks continue and seem to be getting worse. A life of excessive drinking has finally caught up with Morrison. The cracks have been showing for years, even in his earliest days with the Doors.
Alcohol was his drug of choice. I mean, he did other drugs here and there, but mostly it was alcohol. One of the reasons that he would drink so much is because he liked the experience of not being in control and not worrying about it.
Wasted and completely out of control, Morrison became increasingly destructive in the recording studio. The rest of the band were not amused. The band's popularity soared. Morrison spent more and more time in bars. One of his drinking buddies was his bodyguard, Tony Funches.
Barney's Beanery. Ha! That was the prototypical lunatic English roadie, two-fisted drinking bar, clown's den, madhouse that ever existed in L.A. But me and Jimbo managed to get ourselves 86 out of there.
He was so staggeringly drunk, and you just didn't know what he was going to do.
Rock and roll lifestyle. We were stinking drunk all the time.
When every time he came into New York, we used to go to a bar around Columbus Circle. The bar was about two or three city blocks long with a mirror behind the entire bar. And Jim said to me, you know, I could take this bottle and throw it through that mirror and smash it, and I won't feel any remorse at all. Could you do that? And I said, no, I would feel remorse. Which led me to believe that somewhere in the background, there was a sociopath.
There was one night at the Whiskey, and he reached over and just whacked me across the face, just slapped me across the face for no reason at all. No reason.
What happened is he would get stone drunk at the moment's notice. He had no warning, nothing leading up to that to let him know when it was coming on. He'd be fine, he'd be sober, he'd be articulate, and then he'd be wild nuts. And part of that is an allergic reaction to alcohol, which is a documented thing that people have now, but they didn't know what it was then.
If Jim were alive today and were performing the same way, everyone would say, Jim, you got to get into a program. You got to stop drinking. You got to take care of yourself. You got to go to a 12-step program. You got to go to a rehab. You're going to die if you continue this. Then it was, oh, you know, Jim, he drinks too much.
People don't want to think about this or remember this, but he was almost a pariah at one point in Hollywood. Yeah. He would say, oh, God, here comes Jim Morrison. And I remember one night, too, coming out of the Whiskey, and this was pretty typical. He was laying on the ground in the gutter in front of the Whiskey, like, you know, trying to go to sleep. And there were people, you know, sometimes people would come along who weren't strip regulars and go, whoa, and that's Jim Morrison. And they'd try to help him, you know, and he didn't want to know.
Morrison's heavy drinking was getting more dark and more violent. it was also directly affecting the Doors' live shows.
During 1969, the performances degraded steadily. The alcohol became more prevalent. The singing became less dynamic. The shows lost their vigor, lost a lot of their sparkle.
As a band, the Doors had a problem. Not only was their singer stealing all the headlines, he was now sabotaging their live shows.
It's too damn bad that he couldn't keep his act together, because when he was good, he was excellent. And when he was bad, he was terrible.
Hey, what are all these people doing? I hate people.
And now in Paris, lunching with his friend Alain René, the years of hard drinking have taken their toll on Morrison's health. In 13 hours, he will draw his final breath. After lunch, Morrison and René browse through a film shop. Since film school, Morrison has had a passion for the cinema, having recently made a movie called Highway. The film, a dark, impressionistic journey through the desert, was inspired by a troubling childhood experience that has stayed with Morrison throughout his life.
A key event in Jim's childhood, and in fact the thing he referred to as the event that shaped him, occurred when he was 4 years old. The family was driving between Albuquerque and Santa Fe, and they came upon this horrific accident. A truckload of Indian workers had overturned, and Indians were dead all over the highway.
Hey! Stop.
He claimed it affected
entered his own soul and stayed there. Morrison believed that the spirit of one of those Indians, a shaman, entered his own soul and stayed there.
He claimed it affected his writing. He claimed it affected the way he did the concerts, that there was always this soul, this Indian shaman, pushing him to these experiences.
Those experiences were later expressed by Morrison in the form of dark, mystical poems. Poems that the Doors used to set them apart from other bands. Morrison, rock and roll was only a short-term vehicle for his poetic vision.
He looked at his rock and roll world as a temporary stop, because he was a poet and he saw himself that way. And he dragged his poetry books everywhere he went, and he thought this was just a temporary ride.
And in 1969, to prove it, he self-published a limited edition book of his poetry and sent copies out to friends. But the response was less than overwhelming.
You know, there's initial reaction, a negative reaction by the established literary community that, you know, is like, oh, rock star, you know, that created some tensions.
It's tough for a pop star or a rock artist to be taken seriously as a poet, especially when they themselves use that terminology. Jim Morrison, I think, welcomed it more than the others and therefore got vilified for it.
Desperate to be seen as a serious poet, Morrison decided to dismantle his rock star image. He asked that his bare-chested Young Lion photos not be used for promotional purposes. He grew a bushy beard to hide his pretty face and gained an alarming amount of weight.
Guy could grow a Rasputin Russian winter beard overnight as a hairy sumbitch.
He definitely put on weight. Part of that was drinking all the time. But also he was becoming uncomfortable with having to live up to that, you know, sexy young rock and roll image.
And in the summer of 1971, Paris is where Morrison has come to escape that rock star image and to refocus on writing more poetry. He's lost the beard and some of the weight, but years of alcohol abuse have caught up with the frustrated poet. His afternoon walk with his friend Alain René brings him back to his rented apartment on Rue Beautreuil. Even though it's July, he brings up firewood. Climbing the stairs, he suddenly collapses out of breath. Jim Morrison, only 27, but he suffers the aches and pains of a man several times his age. And soon, the pain will end. He has 12 hours left to live. July 2nd, 1971, 6 p.m. For the past 4 months, Jim Morrison has been hiding out in a rented apartment in Paris, on the run from his rock idol image and trying to establish himself as a serious poet. He spent the day with his old friend, Alain René. It will be the last they ever spend together. In 11 hours, Jim Morrison will be dead. When René tells Morrison that he has to leave for a dinner engagement, the singer begs him to go out with him for one more drink. Morrison may have turned his back on his public, but he's not ready to be entirely left alone.
You know, there's a great quote about fame that says, it's not satisfying, but it's addictive. And that's true. What happens is you get used to that attention. Jim was very used to that attention. So in Paris, not having as much of it, I'm sure there was a little bit of loneliness, a little bit of isolation.
But in 1969, as a member of the Doors, Jim Morrison was still very much the center of attention, in all the wrong ways. Although his band was as big as the Beatles and Bob Dylan, his drinking and antisocial behavior was now completely out of control. It drove a wedge between him and the other members of the Doors. But instead of toning down his wild ways,
cigarette?
He blamed his problems on his rock god image, manufactured for his fans. And on one particularly hot night in Miami in 1969, Morrison crossed another line. This time driving a wedge between himself and the people that had made him a star, his public.
Jim had been drinking. He had seen a stage performance in Los Angeles the night before where the whole cast was nude. And I think he decided to test some limits.
As if to mock his sexy image, Morrison removed his shirt, threatening next to take off his trousers.
Now, Ray, knowing Jim's unpredictability, knowing that Jim had been drinking, said to me, Vince, don't let Jim take his pants off. I put my fingers in his belt loops, and I put my arms against my hips and lifted. In fact, it's a wonder his voice didn't go up an octave.
Taking the cue from Morrison, the audience stripped down to the buff.
The audience followed suit, where more than 50% of the audience was actually naked.
The authorities were not amused.
The Crime Commission, I'm calling upon the Dade County Grand Jury and the State Attorney's Office to immediately take criminal action against the group known as the Doors, and we are demanding that action this day.
A few days after the show, they charged Morrison with lewd and lascivious behavior, a felony, even though many claim he never removed his trousers.
The guys couldn't tell. They were looking at their instruments, and Jim doesn't remember whether he was... whether he did or he didn't.
I am willing to state here unequivocally, Jim did not in any way, shape, or manner take his pants down, open his pants up, or expose himself in any way. It was physically impossible for him to do it.
But whether he did or not, he was of special interest to the FBI, who'd been keeping close tabs on him for quite a while. They saw Jim Morrison as a menace to society.
In research for my book, I obtained the FBI files on Jim Morrison. Now, a lot of that is blacked out. But suffice it to say that the FBI was definitely interested in Jim Morrison, monitored his activity, and had him on a watch list.
The FBI's interest in Morrison was maybe less about public nudity and more about his anti-war lyrics on songs like Peace Frog and The Unknown Soldier.
I think also in Jim's lyrics, the fact that he called for revolution regularly, the fact that, you know, he was pushing people to the idea of a revolution. In Jim's mind, I think it really wasn't a conscious, social, organized revolution. It was more an individual revolution of breaking away from the conditioning of society and your parents and trying to come to a new and different reality on your own. And Jim was all about that.
If political means upending society and changing rules and fomenting different kinds of revolution, then the Doors and Jim Morrison were absolutely political.
But in July 1971, as a rock and roll exile in Paris, Jim Morrison seems hardly a threat to anyone but himself. As he drinks with Alain Ronay near Place de la Bastille, an enduring symbol of the French Revolution, the only rebellion brewing is the one that's violently raging through Morrison's body. His attacks suggest he's suffering from acute respiratory distress.
He had had difficulty lately. He had spit up blood a few times. He had had some other problems, respiratory problems. Some of this went back to an injury he had, jumping out the window at the Chateau Marmot in L.A. and doing a Tarzan act off a drain pipe and then falling and smashing off the shed of the place and injuring himself.
Morrison should be looked after in a hospital. Instead, he's busy ordering yet another beer. His friend, Alain Ronay, announces that he has to leave to meet a friend. They will never see one another again. In just 10 hours, Jim Morrison will dabble in more than just alcohol, and it will cost him his life. Shortly after Alain Ronay leaves, Jim meets up with his girlfriend, Pamela Courson. To the outside world, they look like a typical couple in love, out for a stroll in one of the most romantic cities in the world. But since first meeting back in 1966, their relationship has been anything but typical. The pair first met at a club on Sunset Strip called the London Fog, where the Doors were the house band. Morrison is his cosmic mate, and dedicated poetry and songs to her.
And that remained constant and genuine. It did not, however, in the process, make him monogamous.
Jim's wayward ways got him in trouble when he was caught red-handed with rock groupie Pamela DeBar.
I was a cute young girl, and it was 1967, Laurel Canyon, and Jim Morrison was next door, and it was really, you know, a very exciting moment. So I walked in, and there was Jim. And he turned around to me and he said, "Whoa, get it on." That's what he said a lot of time. He said, "Get it on," instead of "hello." So I was like naked there on his floor and he was leaning over me. And just as that was going on, Pam walked in. She has good timing. So she promptly kicked me out.
Beautiful and strong-willed, Pamela Courson didn't take Morrison's infidelity lying down. Their fights were the stuff of legend.
Their relationship was very wild, tempestuous. They pushed off against each other. There was a lot of, wild fights and things like that.
To buffer the fight, they kept separate homes. Morrison stayed at a motel near the Doors' headquarters, while Pam lived at a house on Laurel Canyon, immortalized in the Doors' song Love Street. In their own strange way, they had found love.
And I don't think they ever really thought about being with somebody else on a permanent basis. I think that, you know, they knew that they were the love of each other's lives, and they would always come back together.
But for all the comfort that Pamela brought her boyfriend, she had her own demons. A nasty addiction to heroin, for one. Many thought her unstable and a bad influence on an already troubled Jim Morrison.
She was a junkie. In fact, was the cause of a lot of stress and fighting and arguing with Jim and a lot of his drinking. She was probably the worst influence on his life.
But tonight, as they make their way into a Paris movie theater, they're the picture of domestic bliss. They've come to see a film recommended by their friend, Alain Ronay.
Renee suggested that he go see Pursued, a movie that starred Robert Mitchum, and Jim liked Robert Mitchum. So he went. He wasn't that impressed with it from what Pam said later, but, you know, it was all right.
But in 7 hours' time, nothing will be quite all right. The young couple's domestic bliss will turn to tragedy, and the world of rock and roll will lose one of its brightest lights. July 3rd, 1971, 1 a.m. For the last 4 months, rock star Jim Morrison has called Paris home. He's come here to write and to rest, but his stay has been anything but restful. He's made himself increasingly sick by indulging in a steady diet of whiskey and beer. And tonight, in his apartment, with his cosmic mate Pamela Corson, he decides to go even further. He takes heroin. Up to now, Morrison's entourage has worked very hard to keep the hard stuff well away.
I don't tolerate smack, pure and simple. So everybody knew that it could be dangerous to them to bring that stuff out. Uncle Tony will not be amused. Somebody's going to get hurt. Guaranteed.
But tonight, Uncle Tony is thousands of miles away, and no one's there to look out for Jim.
Over the years, Pam got involved in different kinds of things and eventually started using heroin. Now, this was something Jim was concerned about. It's not something he condoned. It's not something he really approved of. That night, whether it was just the idea of something he wanted to try, just pushing the envelope, whether it was some depression, he'd been very reflective lately, whatever, he tried that.
That decision will prove to be fatal. Stunned out of their minds, Pam and Jim watch home movies of recent vacations. Reels, snort more heroin, and spin some old records. But in just 3 hours, the music will be over. Before his exile to Paris, Morrison had been forced to face a different kind of music, felony charges stemming from the Miami concert. So severe were those charges that they deeply affected the band, and as usual, it was all about Jim.
Well, in the realm of art and theater, I do think that there should be complete freedom for the artist and performer.
Everybody's nerves were on edge. Would he behave? In many places, police were there with a warrant for Jim's arrest. In fact, for the arrest of the whole group, if he so much sneezed the wrong way.
Bookings stopped. Concert promoters no longer wanted to have them because of the fear of arrests and lawsuits and violence and mayhem and breaking obscenity laws.
Jim Morrison and the Doors were not prepared for the backlash that followed.
Radio shows would not play Doors records. Doors recordings were removed from the shelves of record stores. We were absolutely banned from all public media.
Once the darling of the press, Jim Morrison became public enemy number one. He was ridiculed by Rolling Stone magazine with a wanted poster that called the Miami concert Jim's organ recital.
When people started looking at him as a drunken fool, that devastated him. Basically, you know, Jim wanted to be wild and crazy on stage. He did not want to be seen as a fool.
But worse was to come. In September 1970, after awaiting trial for nearly 2 years, James Douglas Morrison was found guilty and sentenced to 60 days hard labor for profanity and 6 months hard labor for indecent exposure. Allowed to remain free on bail pending an appeal, Morrison, the free-spirited bohemian, was terrified of doing time. In his darkest hour, he became increasingly obsessed with his own mortality.
Then when Jimi Hendrix and Janis Joplin died, Jim began to go around and say he was number three. Jim was always saying things like that.
On July 3rd, 1971, in his apartment in Paris, Jim Morrison is well on his way to becoming the next rock and roll casualty. At 3:30 a.m., after passing out on the couch from too much heroin, his girlfriend, Paola Corson, wakes up to find him struggling to breathe. She manages to rouse him. She wants to call a doctor, but Morrison refuses. Pamela, still high from the heroin, goes off to bed. Jim Morrison isn't ready to join her quite yet. Instead, he heads to the washroom where he draws himself a hot bath. It will be the last thing he ever does. 7 months earlier, back in the States and with serious jail time hanging over his head, Morrison became ever more distant from those around him. In concert, he was barely able to perform. In December 1970, on stage in New Orleans, the Lizard King completely fell apart.
He stood up, picked up the microphone stand, and proceeded to smash it through the floor, literally smash a hole in the floor. He then walked off the side of the stage right, went up to the dressing room. That was the end of it.
For years, the other members had put up with Morrison's antics, but this time he'd gone too far. Drummer John Densmore had seen enough.
John tossed his sticks on the floor and said, "That's it, never again." The decision was, we will never perform in public again. We will never go on stage again.
But while they'd never played together live again, the Doors continued to record. They began work on their sixth album, L.A. Woman. But recording alone was not enough for Jim.
He lived on performing. How else could he get the word out about what he thought if he didn't tour? How else was he going to get his message across? How else was he going to be able to bring the gospel of St. Jim to the crowd?
I think he began to think, well, I've got to get my life together. Maybe going to Paris, I can come up with some new things. I can define myself more as a poet. I can get away from the things causing me trouble, and, I'll start anew.
But if Morrison's move to Paris was the beginning of anything, it was the beginning of the end. At 4 a.m. on July 3rd, 1971, his girlfriend, Pamela Corson, wakes to the sound of Morrison throwing up in the washroom. Sick to his stomach, he's throwing up blood. Again, Morrison refuses to call the doctor. When his nausea finally passes, he tells her to go back to bed, that he will soon join her. But he never quite makes it. Instead, Jim Morrison slips quietly into unconsciousness. Paris, July 3rd, 1971, 6 a.m. As the city slowly comes to life, Pamela Corson suddenly wakes up. The night before, she and her boyfriend Jim Morrison partied the night away, snorting heroin. And now, she wonders why he never made it back to bed. She finds him passed out in the bathtub. His nose and mouth are crusted with blood. She tries to wake him, but he doesn't move.
And at first, she thought he might be joking around with her because he did stuff like this all the time. So she stayed in there and watched, and he didn't move. He didn't move.
Because she can't speak French fluently, she feels unable to call an ambulance. Instead, she phones Jim's best friend in Paris, Alain René, and asks him to call one for her. Before the medics get there, fireman Alain Raison arrives.
When we entered the bathroom, I saw the body of a man, the head thrown back. The water, it was just a little bit pink, because I think he must have bled.
The rescuers have no idea that their patient is, in fact, Jim Morrison.
The water was warm, so the body was also warm, which led us to presume that maybe he was not dead.
They rush Morrison's still warm body out of the tub to discover he's only warm because of the tepid bathwater.
Very quickly, we became aware that, in fact, he was dead.
The time of death is estimated at around 5 a.m. The death certificate states that he died of apparent heart failure. Citing no foul play, the authorities see no reason for an investigation or to order an autopsy. Jim Morrison, one of the most important singers of his era, is dead at 27. Many do not buy the ending to the Jim Morrison story, leading to a flurry of mysterious theories.
I was just going to say that because I think they say his dad that had all that power in the naval, in his rank of colonel, admiral, whatever he was. This was all then play on. Let's see here. It's almost over. See if we get some callers.
Some say that before Pam Courson called Elaine Ronay about an ambulance, she called her heroin dealer, who came to the apartment and advised Pam to flush the drugs. Soon after, that same dealer hightailed it out to Marrakesh to avoid legal hassles. Others say that Jim had been out partying the night before he died at a Paris nightclub, where he OD'd in their bathroom. Fearing being tied to his death, the nightclub had Morrison's body carried back to his apartment and dumped in the bathtub. Others still believe Morrison staged his own death and is still alive somewhere, having finally escaped the image that had troubled him so.
You know, there's all this talk about Jim faking his own death, and he promoted those rumors because he talked about doing it, because Rimbaud had done that and had disappeared and wrote his great works, you know, up to when he was 18, 19, and then disappeared into Africa. And that's what Jim Morrison talked about doing.
I always thought the real testimony to his mystique was the fact that so many people believed maybe he hadn't really died.
One of the greatest, I think, proofs that he didn't fake his own death is the fact that could Jim Morrison stay out of the spotlight 40 years? I don't think so. Not the Jim Morrison that I've learned he was.
Jim Morrison is buried in Père Lachaise Cemetery in Paris, not far from Henri de Balzac, Marcel Proust, and Oscar Wilde. Every year, thousands of fans continue to visit his gravesite.
It had been really important to him to be known as something more than this rock icon, this so-called Lizard King. And I wrote the obituary at Rolling Stone. I thought, why not issue the rock thing on the headline and have him go out as what he wanted to be known as, James Douglas Morrison, poet.
It's like that, I did, kind of, sort of. I did. About Jimmy. Anyway, hello, it's almost 3 o'clock, I'll be on 2 hours, I might just take it early out, nobody calls in, just take it early out tonight, hey, I can't hang. Giddy up, hi-ho, silver. Riders on the storm. Why did you don't? Here's something about Oliver Stone in the Doors. Let's some door in it. Stick around here. See you.
Few bands in the history of rock music have created controversy like The Doors. Their charismatic, unpredictable lead singer, Jim Morrison, combined talent, intelligence...
Oh, shit. I'm messed up. No, I'm still here. Somebody else had something. Join call. All right, two fellas, if you want to call in, call in. I start chasing people in Skype, I get lost. I'll bring you in here. You're going to talk something. Want me to add you? Mitchell lost his internet. Yeah, I wanted to bring out Mitchell. he lost his internet. So he called me on his cell phone to see if it was working, and it was. But a lightning hit his right by his house, and it knocked out his internet and shit. Trip. So everybody say a little prayer for Mitchell and his gal Sharon, and even Bill Grant's there. Two feathers. Trying to bring you in, Sue Feathers, since you don't want listening to me. Cell phone. Let's see if this brings him in. Wondering if they need. What's happening? What you doing? Turning your tuner down?
I was cleaning, dude, and I was listening to you. Man, that's sad about Jim Morrison, huh? I mean, my spouse and I had been watching about Jim Morrison in the Doors a couple, you know, with Val Kilmore when he played Jim Morrison. And
I remember that movie too, vaguely, but he did a good. I thought he played a good Jim Morrison. Talk about Val Kilmer.
Yeah. Yeah, man. I mean, goodness gracious, man. I mean, dude, it took me years to like Jim Morrison. It really, in the Doors. I don't know why. I just, later on in life, dude, I really dug it, you know, dug who he was, you know?
I liked him. He's a trippy dude. Beatles. I liked the Beatles back then more than anything, and then the Stones, and then like the Doors. My cousins were into the Doors, but you learn about them as you get older. What I brought about tonight, talking about them, and you know, just I don't know. I just seemed like I was listening to Beatles back when that and my cousins were listening, and they lived right across the town. So I don't. To each his own.
I wasn't on the acid trip that he was on, you know, and we all know that that's what was his main thing, you know, besides drinking. So,
and he did, I think he did a lot of coke.
Really?
A lot of coke. Didn't say, a lot of, I don't know about LSD, but it's hard. He probably did a lot of shit, except I don't think he did the heroin.
Yeah.
He was snorting it. When I just played it, they were showing him as snorting it. I remember I remember in high school and these guys across the street that rented a place. They said they had some heroin. They had some heroin and some of it spilt on the floor. Jared, go snort that up. I go, that ain't nothing. It looked like cocaine. And so I got on the floor, and it was like a nice little pile, and I snorted it. I didn't feel nothing. I didn't. If it was heroin, I didn't get down. It was like coke. It was like, you know, like, wow. You've done coke before, haven't you?
Yeah, oh, yeah. I did a couple times.
There's coke that's stepped on so much it's dusty and then there's that Bolivian plague, because like the guys from that show would say, dynamite.
A.J. Walker.
Yeah, he got it. He used to, when I was working at the Showboat, I'd get off work at 3 o'clock, and I lived close by the apartment. I'd walk through the bowling alley, and he'd be in there bowling by himself, J.J. Walker, or whatever his name. Big old eyeball looking mother. No, I'm just kidding. But, we used to say, hey, Jimmy, what's up?
Oh.
Yeah, he'd be in it. It's a shame that place is gone now, and it's where I used to work the longest. It's the Showboat Hotel. They totally knocked it down, and there's a big AM/PM store in front of it with the gas. And then there's a big, they built a big Showboat condos, apartments, big complex for called the Showboat. So that lives on. And I used to know the owner. I met the owner liked me, Joe Kelly. Talking about, that's the longest job I had in town. Well, I the tester at 8, but that was second. So, yeah, I missed, man, there were a lot of good times. I got to say, it was wild times. But what's on your agenda? Take over for a minute. I got to step away. John's calling me.
All right. Bring your Big John in. Big John.
Did you hear Big John Mania last night? He was with me.
Yeah, I listened to him a little bit last night. I don't remember what happened, JR. When he came on, he was talking to your nephew, Jason. And the other guy that you brought in. Like I don't hear anybody now. Did you mute out, Jerry? I can't hear you.
Right there. Cover me for a minute. I'll be right there.
All right, sucker wolf. Big John on with it? Heard something. Jerry, you muted, dude. I hear something, but Jerry sounds like he's muted. Where's Big John? See if I could have. I don't even know if I have Big John. Let's see. I have John Z. I don't know how is John Z. I ain't heard from that dude in a long time. I hope AJ's doing all right. Man, I ain't, it's 0808. Free and awake. I sent him a message. Like to. I should see if, cause he's always, Yeah, I thought you was going to bring Big John on, dude. What happened? He didn't say nothing. He just jumped off. Like, what the hey, Jer? I don't have Big John on my Skype, I don't think.
I'll be right there. I didn't say I was going to bring Big John on.
I thought you said you were.
Gosh, you don't know how to run shotgun.
Oh, I thought he was coming in. I thought you were bringing him in. I didn't know. Get my glasses on, man. My glasses.
Stop rubberneck. I had to use the head, and I asked you to cover me, and you don't say nothing.
No, I didn't know what happened. I thought I lost the
service. I said, I'll be right. I said, I didn't want to go say I got to take a piss. Shit, but you couldn't read my lips?
No, I couldn't. They on day in Las Vegas.
You called me Sucker Wolf, so you must have saw something.
No, I heard something, and I looked and saw the server was still there. I thought you were bringing in Big John. I didn't want to.
I said, I'll be right back. I got to step away.
All right.
Cover me. That doesn't mean.
All right, so you stepping away again or what?
No.
Well, I thought you were going to step away, Sucker Wolf. I was going to throw down an article or something, you know? don't know.
Hijacker wants to come in. Hang on.
Wait, hold on.
I'm going to bring in the hijacker. I couldn't bring him in on the call. So I'm adding him now. See what she's got to say. As all that, going back to you, Ryan, Rectify, you going with him, ride shotgun, and you lost that talent, Two Feathers. You better polish up on what I say.
Hey, listen here, you little, low life, nighttime, no show host.
I need to 86 you to keep that shit. Welcome to the call, hijacker.
You know I love you, Jerry. You know it.
I try to make a compliment about you and Rectify, and you haven't learned since. So go back to school.
Hey, sucker wolf. Pipe down over there.
You don't know how to pipe down. Be quiet for a minute, since now you want to talk, and I'm back.
All right.
Hi. What's up, Jacker?
Yeah, that's can you hear me? Okay.
Hey, what's up, Jack?
There's some buzz behind you.
Yeah, well, that's the nature of the computer. The mortal sin, Two Feathers, is dead air on radio.
I was confused, dude. I got confused. I'm sorry.
Yeah, well, you gotta, radio's nothing if it's dead air. But, So where are we at?
The Ukraine war and PSYOP and controlled opposition.
I've been just talking about...
That's loud, dude. Is that your fan?
Yeah, let me try something here. I'll be right back.
I'd rather do that than you being quiet, though. I'm going to drive you a little bit about that.
Damn, dude, get off my freaking ball sack.
I ain't touching you. You got cooties.
No, I didn't know, Jay. I was confused, dude. I didn't know because I didn't hear you say I'll be right back. You said you were bringing Big John on, I thought. You see?
I didn't say I was bringing Big John on. I said, you mentioned him, and I said, that was the last night he was on, talking about his Parkinson's disease. But he wasn't.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yes, really.
Oh, okay. I didn't know, Jay. I mean, I'm sorry. I apologize for the dead air thing, dude. I didn't know what was what. I was kind of confused. I mean, I apologize, you know. Damn.
I'm just saying.
Man, pop a high blood pressure.
Most people know that by now that I've trained over the years, but got to deal with.
I handle up when you walk away. I mean, I just didn't expect it just a drop and then not. I mean, I didn't know you were walking completely away just at the split of a second.
I had to take a piss.
All right, that's fine. I just didn't know.
And I didn't know. You should say that. I'll say I'll be right back, and I play something.
All right.
But I thought you'd know that.
No, I thought you said you were bringing. I'm not going to argue.
Jacker, even. Yeah,
that's fine. Is Jacker back?
No, he left.
Oh, he said he'd be right back. Okay, all right. So, I was just going to ask you, you remember when they, I don't know if you heard, like in your, with your age group, right?
Yeah.
I don't know if you remember hearing anything in Hollywood. They always said that 27 was a big thing in Hollywood, that a lot of movie stars like Heath Ledger, the girl from, Different Strokes. You know, she died at 27, I think.
Which one, though? Different Strokes.
Yeah, with Little Arnold. Remember Little Arnold and Willis?
Oh, okay, yeah.
Yeah. And he said, what you talking about, Willis?
Yeah, I was thinking, and I just know that it was Jimi Hendrix, Janis Joplin, Jim Morrison, all 27, and the guy from Washington State. Can't think of the name of the band. Was one of the, and then that chick from folk singer from England.
Yeah.
There's a chick. I can't remember.
Yeah, Janis Joplin was one of them. Damn animals, man. Look at this.
There's just something about the 27 Club, but
yeah,
I don't know what the, you know, Jim Morrison, the rumor, I thought that they just snuffed his death and he, just like Elvis, probably John F. Kennedy Jr. Mm-hmm. They're all still, yeah, Cobain.
Kurt Cobain, yeah. Mm-hmm.
What else is new? What'd you do? What's going on with your show and you trying to do it while you're driving?
I'm gonna attempt it.
Done it yet? It's every Monday night, isn't it?
Yeah, every Monday night. Right after Noreen Helpan at 1 o'clock Central Time, 2 o'clock Eastern. Yeah, with Sergeant Miller and I.
No, it's Sergeant Miller and you. Put his name first.
I did put his name. You didn't hear me?
He said, Sergeant. He said, I'm
Sergeant
just.
Sergeant Miller and I. That's it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I'm just playing with you.
All right.
Get your kidneys to howl at me.
Oh, freaking jam.
What's going on in your neighborhood? Tell me something.
Yeah. Okay, well, I was just, what I did was, took and moved the sofa and, because I had just got a lamp for one of my corners of my room, right in the front room. Cause I had went shopping tonight, you know, I try to get grocery shopping over with. Of course, as you know, they high price every damn thing. You know, you got to pay into the hundreds of dollars now to get groceries. And, so I went grocery shopping tonight. I picked up a lamp for the corner and I had put that together and decided to vacuum the big rug in the front room. And I went ahead and vacuumed and shampooed it as well.
Wow.
Really? Yeah, man. Freaking like moved the sofa and swept underneath the sofa and got all the shoes up from underneath the sofa. And man, like cleaned the ceiling fan and. Man, crack the ice, wash the dishes.
What, are you for Susie Homemaker tonight?
Oh, yeah. That's, man.
Did you have help from your
spouse?
No. You did, you just soloed that out.
Soloed it out. I hope only myself.
Wow.
Did the whole thing. Shampoo the rug and everything. Not at all. They like that.
What kind of shampoo are you got? Is it part of the vacuum system? It's all in one that converts to, is it a Kirby?
What kind is that? I got it right here. Hold on. I'll tell you. It's they call it. It's a power, Bissell.
Okay.
Yeah, Bissell. Yep, it's a Bissell. And, what it is you, as you push it, you squirt it as you're pushing it. And then as you're drawing back.
It's got a lever that, where your whole handle is and you hold it to spray and then you let it off and then it sucks it up.
Yeah, correct. That's it.
I got one of those.
Oh, you got one?
I got one that's strictly a shampoo. Kind of, it's old, but I bought it for like $40 years ago. I haven't used it in a long time. I've got that out in the patio sitting there. I got like three vacuum cleaners. And I try to just keep one of them running all, you know, they seem like they have their fits. Those, the devil one that's called the devil, red devil, I guess. That brand. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have no bags in it. It just, excuse me, it sucks it up, in like a container, right? It doesn't have bags, but it sucks it up into a container, and you just take it out and dump it, clean it up pretty good. But the tires came off of it.
Damn.
And they won't. I can't. So I just I work. It's like my workout when I vacuum because I have the wheels on it. So it's a little more of it. You know, pulling it back and forth, you use a little bit more muscle. Yeah. So. Yeah.
Oh, that's nice, dude. Yeah. This one here, it's brand new. We just got it like, probably about a couple months ago. And, it seems to be doing the job. I mean, once it, you know, cause we have like a couple dogs, like little small dogs. While we're in the Pekingese.
Yeah. They get their hair.
Yeah. The freaking hair builds up on the rug, man. It was bad this time. And, boy, when you put that shampoo to it though, and you suck it up, what it does is it rolls it up for you, like rolls the hair up.
Well, wet. The container that the rug cleaner washes it up to, you got to go rinse that tank out, don't you? And it gets, you can see how much shit it's pulling out of that carpet. Turns that soapy water just turns to, it's now, you know, you're amazed.
Oh yeah.
It amazed that how much it. Dirt's in there. I got to do this one right here in my office.
Mm-hmm.
But shit, I'm so lazy. I don't do it.
What you do is, you just go after it, man. You just, you know, you just go after it and do what you got to do.
I even got one that this guy left out in my garage. It's like you hold it, and it's only a little, like a, it's only like you hold it. It's, I don't know, it's like this, it's not very big, and it's all in one. It's all in, within about the size of it's a cube. If you imagine a cube, it's only like about 14 by 14, a cube that size, 14 inches.
Yeah.
And you just hold the handle, and I got on my hands and knees to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Seemed to work all right, but it's sometimes Boo pisses and you don't realize it until you catch it when the light comes out through the window when I have the curtains open. Damn. So that's when I get sometimes, cause once it's dry, you don't see it unless you got an angle of some light on it. And then I'll get busy and have to douche it up, you know?
Yeah.
But I don't, what am I going to do? Every time I try, if Boo slips and poops in the house,
mm-hmm.
if I try to put her nose in it.
Yeah.
She wants to fight, man. She don't play.
Really? So
I had to say that's my fault because she was barking at the front door and I said, I'll be there a second and I spaced it. And ever since she's been young, I caught her pooping in the house. She doesn't do bad, you know what I'm saying? But,
yeah.
But it's the idea. And I try to put her nose in it. What do you get it real close and I'm holding her neck. You know, I'm holding her by the neck, trying to push her nose in it.
Oh,
who's that?
Oh, that was my spouse. She's saying that she's cold because I cleaned, Jared, for these, floor vents. For these floor vents, they
for the air conditioner or just the heater?
No, air conditioning.
Both.
Yeah, we don't use the heater for this place. But I was going to say for the floor vent, what you can do is you can go to Walmart or something and you can get these little, deflectors. They're shaped like a, could you say, like a half moon or something, and they magnetize, and you stick them, you just like let them magnetize on top of your vent, and it'll deter the air where you want it to go at, where you actually want it to go.
Instead of it coming straight up, you put it, it's got a molded metal that'll make it go a 90-degree angle.
Yeah, it's plastic.
About that. What about it, though?
But it'll, like, if you got a floor unit, like a floor vents, or even, like, overhead, you probably wouldn't have to worry about it, but if anybody has, like, floor vents.
Mine is, it's got gas, it's on the roof, it's gas and AC.
Okay.
It's gas for heat and electric for AC, and it comes through the ceiling in every room. Yeah. But I don't have no, I close them off in the bedroom right now.
Yeah.
And have it coming in my office for more, I don't need it cooling as cool back there as it's here. So when I go crash, I open them up in the bedroom so I can sleep. But yeah, it got up to 90 degrees today, about four high today. Yeah. High yesterday was 90 degrees. Clear blue sky too.
Wow. I was talking with Wynot early, and he said it got 100 degrees over there in Texas today. Yesterday.
I believe it.
Oh, yeah. Freaking Texas gets hot, dude.
And then Mitchell called me earlier, well, yesterday afternoon. Jerry, what are you doing? I said, not much. He goes, I'm testing out my cell phone. A lightning bolts hit right by his house and knocked out his power and his internet and everything. But it didn't hit the house. It hit. And Bill Grant stays up there with him, too. He kind of adopted Bill Grant to help him through the troubles. But
I forgot.
What's up?
I cut my son's hair today, yesterday, too, last night. Before what's I went that? Huh? What was that?
You got those barber
clippers? Yeah.
Yeah.
The electric one? The electric one that you can change the cut and the tip and it's electric?
Yeah. That's the one.
I got a couple. I don't use it. I haven't. I need to get my hair designer, but kind of let it look like I'm a bum. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say that I cut his hair before I went grocery shop. So I even did that two things along with everything else I did.
Then after you did all the cleaning, then you cut his hair and then swept it up?
No, I went cut his hair and cut his hair and then went grocery shop and then come back and did all the cleaning stuff that I was doing. Put a lamp together and everything.
Hang on.
Put a corner. Yeah, you all right?
I'll be right back. Give me a second.
Okay, no problem. Yeah, just go ahead and do what you got to do, dude. I just was trying to pick up everything. Oh, man, I tell you. And then I had a puzzle. Because I like putting puzzles together and I do artwork. Not like most painters. A lot of painters do art, you know, in that way. I do what's called line art, pop art, and silk art. That's what I do. And, I mean, I could probably do art if I had the time. But, I do puzzles too. And I had one just about completed, and my dang on cat, man, freaking got on a hold of my I had it on a table, and I must have got up to go use the restroom, and I'll be doggone if that cat didn't get a hold of my puzzle, because I come back and you know how you got your end pieces. Well, I noticed my end pieces was like if the cat was scratching at something, it was like my end pieces were like up in the air. And then I had one piece missing, like she had put it in her mouth and carried it off. And I looked everywhere for that one piece of puzzle and could not find it. Could not find it. And I was going to take and put it together anyway and try to use a Coca-Cola box and take and make me a piece and then put her name on it, because her name is Boo Boo Kitty, like off of Laverne and Shirley. Shirley had a stuffed animal named Boo Boo Kitty. Well, I was going to put her name on a piece of puzzle and then put her name on it for remembrance that she lost my doggone freaking piece of puzzle. Well, because that didn't bother me, right? So I noticed my son had came in the room. And he found in the front room where I had my puzzle up underneath of the sofa, because nobody walks under the sofa, right?
Yeah.
But what they were doing was they had been shoving the shoes and everything else underneath of the sofa. And what happened, lo and behold, see, I got my puzzle on this puzzle board. And it's not the kind that rolls up. But I'm going to get the kind that rolls up so I can continue when I put the puzzle together. I could just roll it up, right? So I got my puzzle on this flat board right now. But from everybody shoving his shoes underneath of the thing, underneath of the sofa, guess what happened? Tore my puzzle 7/8 of the way. My puzzle's all in pieces again. So not only do I have the one piece and missing, but I don't, with the puzzle being all torn apart again, I don't know if I'm missing any pieces again on this one puzzle. But you know what? I'm crazy enough to put the puzzle back together just to see if I'm missing any more pieces than that one piece that I'm missing. And I could go buy the same puzzle. That ain't a problem. I can go buy the same puzzle. And I got another one that I want to put together. I got another one that I want to do. And they're 500-piece puzzles. Because of the fact that I like art. This is art to me. Puzzles are like art to me, you know? So it's not a big deal for me to want to put this one back together and just see if I'm missing any more. If I'm missing any more, I'm just going to throw this one away and get another one just like it. And I'll do it later after I do my other one.
You remind me of a time in my life. I was probably about 10. My two brothers, we were watching TV a Saturday morning, or I'm not even sure if it was summertime. Mm-hmm. But we're watching the living room. We got the TV on. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, we hear somebody pull up in the driveway. And I look out the window and I said, it's mom's friend, Beulah. And so the house was a mess. I mean, the living room was papers everywhere. So we just took everything and just in a matter before she got to the door, put everything under the couch. And it looked pretty cool for on the fly, us three. Kind of cleaning up, me and my two brothers, tidying up the living room like that. But I remember we put it all under the sofa, and we were proud of ourselves, to do that on the fly. He just reminded me.
Yeah. Oh shoot, man! I tell you, Jerry, I really had this puzzle. Like, man, it was damn near 15/16 of the way freaking being finished, dude. I mean, I was right there.
What is it again?
The puzzle?
The puzzle? Yeah, is it the ones that all look the same and they're all about the same size? And they always got those five loops that, I know it's that each one is about the size of a quarter or a little bit bigger.
Yeah. Uh-huh. 500 piece.
Yeah, those things, Yeah.
And I had it inside of a bag too. Like I used to work for FedEx. And I had it in two FedEx. Cause see, FedEx gives you these plastic bags. When you deliver a package and it's raining outside or something like that,
yeah.
Wrap it up in the rain bags or whatever and, leave it wherever, you know, and so it doesn't get wet, whatever you're delivering. Well, I had the puzzle, the little board, I had it in two different, you know, two bags. I slid one side of the board in the bag, and then I slid the other side in the bag. So I had two bags.
And it kind of broke it up. Did you glue them together or?
No, not yet. I was going to get some Luon. They call it, I think, Luon board or whatever, Luon board. And that's what you glue it on.
Ah, but you hadn't done it. What's the puzzle look like?
It's a fall scene. It's got like a little fire pit at the front of the scene. It's got pumpkins in it, like green pumpkins.
Like an outdoor.
Yeah, and they got barns.
Like a campfire?
Like a campfire.
It's a fire out in the woods.
No, it's a house. It's just like by a couple houses that's out in the country, the countryside.
Where's the fire at? Outside?
Yeah, out by the gate, outside the gate, on the outside.
What's its purpose?
Yeah, man, just beautiful. What's
its purpose?
Oh, purpose is just like a fall scene.
But that the fire's, what's it? That's what I'm trying to say. If it's somebody
sitting around,
if it ain't no campfire, I don't know. That's just why I asked.
Yeah, it's just a.
How long did it take to put that together?
A couple weekends.
You and your wife?
No, just me.
Drinking coffee or drinking cocktails?
No, drinking soda. I drink Diet Coke. Yeah, I just drink Diet Coke.
Mm-hmm. Gosh, that stuff's not good for you.
I'm not dead yet.
I still have once in a while I'll have a highball with bourbon Coke. But usually I get a shot of bourbon and one Budweiser when I'm in my, when I go gamble. Get me out of the house.
Yeah.
I ordered these seeds on the internet. It was five seeds, cannabis seeds for $89.
Wow.
And then, but it said 10 for 119.
What?
10 seeds for $119. And they're feminized seeds. But they had a special when I was in that website that 20 for $119.
Wow.
And I did this, about 10 days ago. Well, I got the little package and it's indica. Gorilla Glue before, supposedly the real shit. So I got one cannabis plant in my tent now with my shit that's looking really sweet. I could show it to you right now, but I'm scared to go get it out to bring it. I wish I had a line that I could reach my cam to go in there.
Yeah.
And, I'm telling you, it's only this plant that I have now. I started from one seed. Because I had clones and they all died. And I haven't talked to the guy that sells me these clones. I can't get a hold of them. So I guess this plant that I got now, it's probably about 2 months old. But it's only about 18 inches tall and I cut it off about 3 inches and it was from the top. So it's like a stick where I cut it off, right?
Right.
It's like 18 inches. It was like 23 inches tall, and I took like the top 3 inches that had all these, and I put it in the clone powder, and so it's still happening. So it's still growing. It's still green in my tent. I got a little dome over it so it holds the humidity. It sweats in there in the tent, and I was telling Mitchell about it. Mitchell said, damn, because I took all the leaves off of the plant and I topped it, right?
Right.
So it looked like it just had, but it has a bunch of heads.
Wow.
It has a bunch of heads that I didn't touch or I didn't pinch. Usually you can pinch the top, it'll start growing a double. But this thing was so thick, it had all these heads coming out of it in the base. So it's got like 20 tops. So Mitchell goes, I showed it to him. I said, look, I took all the big leaves off so the light will come down into where all these heads are, just like the one that's on the top. Right. And he said, oh, Jerry, you better be careful. And I said, nah, this is the way I used to do it. Because the more if you pinch the tips, and that makes a double. Every time you pinch the tops, the first one comes up is at one head. You pinch it, it doubles. Then when it goes a little higher, you pinch it, it quadruples. And every time you pinch, but I didn't really have to do that with this plant. I don't know where I got the seed from, but I'm pretty sure it's a it's a female. But I just had a random seeds that someone gave me, and now it doesn't look naked, man. It's filling back up with more. And I wanted to show Mitchell the other day, but he just called me and he said that lightning bolt hit my house and we couldn't get on the Skype. He was just calling me from his cell phone. So I got 20 of these seeds and I got them. I had them for about 3 or 4 days. So right now I'm doing something productive. I took four of the, I got, let's see how they got in this. I got 4 seeds and I put them in this water that my plants with. I adjust the pH. I put the nutrients in a gallon of water, this real good water I get. I put a couple of nutrients in it, out of these 2 bottles. And then I adjust the pH of the water. It's usually a little bit, acidic. And I put a couple drops of pH plus into the water. And I stir it up and I test it and I get it at 6.5 or 6.0. 7.0 is, neutral. It's not too, is even. It's not too acidic and it's not too, alkaline. Okay.
Yeah.
So a pH of 7.0 is even. It's even. It's not acidic and it's not alkaline. It's even. For cannabis, it says to have it about 6.5, just a kiss under, just a kiss acidic. So I adjust it with this little tester and shit, and it seems to be helping. First time I had nutrients with this plant that I was kicking ass. The other plants I didn't have all. I didn't go to do my homework, so it's always a learning process. But I invested $120 for these 20 seeds, and I will report soon. I'm trying to germinate. I finally, while we're talking to you, and I said I'll be right back. I got a glass of water, about a 4-ounce glass of water, but I put the nutrient water in, and I dropped 4 seeds in it. So I got to put it in my water. Into the closet that has my water heater, so it's warm in there and dark. And as soon as these break a little, they'll break open like when you see something sprout, like alfalfa sprouts. You ever seen how they look?
I don't remember.
They're a bunch of they're in the health food store. They're tasty too. Like there's lettuce for sandwiches. I used to eat a lot of alfalfa sprouts in college. But it's just long sprouts, and you see the seed, and it's green. You know, it's a bundle of alfalfa sprouts. So that's what they'll break out with a little white head, and as soon as that happens, I got the little starter, little thing that's got the dirt in it, and just make a little hole in it, and you drop that seed in there. And just cover it up and keep it moist. and it'll come out. And that's what I've done with the one plan I have now. I went back to basics with, instead of buying clones, because I couldn't get a hold of any. And I just said, and I've got the cloning powder, two types. So it's always, I'm always learning, you know. I'm not trying to play Joe Badass, but it'd be nice to, and when they start to bud, you'll start seeing those flowers, how pretty they look, and they'll get little follicles on them, and they'll be kind of, it's part of the bud. They'll get these follicles around them, and it'll be kind of a white, they're white, and you kind of let them, you kind of let it go a little longer, and as soon as they start to turn, they start to look transparent, like clear lacquer, the follicles, cut it down and let it hang upside down, and then let it dry, and it'll be some, it'll be, the seeds that I got is very, indica, and then there's sativa. Sativa is grown like in the tropical areas of Asia and Brazil and stuff. It's a tropical sativa. Indica is grown up in northern India, up in the mountains, and it's just a different type of, you know. So that's the two that they years ago, many years ago, that's what they did. There was sativa and then there was indica, but now now there's so many hybrids and the way it smells. So they got the way it smells, that describes it. They'll say skunk or something else. And that's the best weed I like is it's two hits and you're stoned. I mean, it's like, it's deep body and head. And that's what we used to get from Northern Cal back in the day. It was called skunk. And the closest thing that I've had of it since is my buddy passed away, but a couple years ago, I would go to he had a medical card, and I'd go to the dispensary that sold the medical marijuana, even before they made it for the recreational, and for $200, I'd get an ounce of that skunk, Gorilla Glue 4. Oh my God. I was in heaven. And so I haven't had anything since. And, if I go to the dispensaries or, some of this bud that the clones that he gave me, they just dried out because I didn't have nutrients. I didn't know what I was doing. So they just, I thought they were going to come back, but they budded about 30 inches tall with a bunch of heads. And they just, so they were like, if I clipped it right where I let it, they dried out right in the pots. There's still two in my tent that are, that I haven't broke down to trim yet, you know, so what I did is I didn't do it right. I should have cut them and you shouldn't have let them dry in the dirt like a desert, you know, like you see something in the desert, it dries up and starts rolling away. Well, with cannabis, it's not good to, I shouldn't have let them, I didn't think they were dying or whatever. You always live and learn. So they did bud and I don't know, it has a trippy taste. And, my buddy said, you better go down to the hydro, whatever he calls it, to this guy's shop. And it's way across town. And I went and seen him and I spent like $55. And I got three nutrients, flower bloom and regular grow and three types of nutrients. And then I got the pH tester, which is a little bottle that you test the water and you put four drops in it. And if it turns, it just tells you what your pH is. And it's usually, even this good water that I get that's filtered, it's a kiss acidic. So I've got a, so like I said, I once I put the nutrients in a gallon of water, and I get 5 gallons in those big 5 gallon, you know, those big 5 gallon bottles that I have them fill it up, and then I fill a gallon up for me to drink and do, and a gallon for the nutrients, and I use it accordingly. But, yeah, so I have to bring up the pH a little bit after the nutrients I add to that gallon, and man, I've been happy. So, but I should have had these soaking in, these seeds soaking. Where did I put it? I should have these seeds soaking. I just got this wet taste. Today's what? Sunday, Saturday? I think I got these Thursday morning. These seeds just came. So they brought them to me pretty quick. Now there is one seed company called Amsterdam Seed Company that's got some bitchin' seeds in there, and they show you everything. It's all the seeds. Amsterdam Seed Company. And I remember them from some time back that I was checking them out, but I can't go through them. They can't send it to America, United States. And then I found this other one. I'm looking at the, what, like, this is, it's NXSYST Incorporated. And there is some data inside, but I got a deal. This is called, I Love Growing Marijuana. That's the name of this website. Now they sent me the seeds. And so they got me a card in here that says 10% discount. Jared, receive $10 off your next seed order. And it has a card number on it. Happy growing, Robert. And then it says, congratulations on the other side. It says, hello, grower. Congratulations. Goods delivered. Now it's time to check your goods for problems. Remember your payment description. Check out our germination guide and grow some amazing plants. Please check out your order confirmation email. And I did. And so they've got a website that I can go to at least get some knowledge on their steps of germination, which I haven't done. And like I said, in Facebook, I got to put, so now I got 16, I'm germinating 4 and I got 16 put back. But this, I hope, what I'm trying to say real quick is I hope that I can, once I got these going, I can have one plant that I can clone, and I'll have 3 plants that are growing. So I could save seeds that way, just to experiment, or after I get these 4 going, I might do 4 more, or just depends. But my tent's only designed to, you can put, it with the light in the tent that I have, you can grow 4 bushy plants in it. So that's what because it's a 4x4 and it's like 80 inches tall. If you ever check those tents out, they got this silver lining in them. It's called Malar, that they're lined to reflect everything. It's a bitchin'. You can see them in Amazon. They're bitchin' grow tents. A lot of people are selling here on Craigslist in town, selling, like, you know, they bought something and they're upgrading, so they selling what they got. Mm-hmm. All types of lights, but the light I got, it cost $500. Wow. And the light I got is, it cost me $500, and the tent cost me, I think I spent, oh shit, I spent a little over $600 for those 2 items.
Damn.
But I did it with my money from what they call it, the money that Trump sent us. I invested it that way, and but I already had a tent. I have a 2x4 tent. I got another tent that I had before, 2x4, and it's got a light in it that has fans, LED, and it was working pretty good, but I got it shut down, and I'm using the big tent now. But this light, it's waterproof, and it's pretty awesome. It's called the Spider. It's a Spider 4000, and it's shit. But it does suck some electricity. And I got a fan in there. I got a fan in there that blows. An orange tree in there right now, and a tomato plant. The little clone growing, and the plant that I'm just talking about.
Yeah, I got so, clones, dude.
Well, see ya. Maybe I'll bounce. Before you go, if you hear this, let's see if you messed it up or we messed it up. Just tell me if you hear this noise. You don't hear that, do you?
No.
Okay. Because you called it. All right. Well, if you got to go, see ya. God bless you, bro.
Hey, thank you for having me, Jay. I got to put in my alternator tomorrow.
Oh, Lucy's not playing. Got to go.
No. Just saying, I got to do a little auto work. You know, mechanic.
Okay, well, care of business. You don't have to explain, Lucy. Got business.
Yeah. Okay, Ricardo.
Good night.
You go make some taco.
Good night, Two Feathers. I don't know what happened to Jacker. He left me a message. I'm scared to go over there and look at that message. I don't know what happened to Jacker. But he slept me a message over there. Oh, shit. Maybe I'll just try to bring him back in and buy it. Or I'm just going to cut out early tonight. Mitchell's up, but I don't know if he's come in and say hello. Let me see. Try to bring in the Jacker because I messed him up. I don't know why he dropped. Because his shit sounded bad. That's right. Sorry. Let's see if I can get Jacker back in here. Give him some. Let him share and see what happens. He might have went back to bed. See, man. Jacka! Hail to the community. All right. Well, shit, I hate to get lost, but no, I'll just do it just another way. So anyway, it's just another day. It's just another day. Let's see that. How's that? Just hang on. Hang on, Slooper. Let's see. Let's see what happens if I try to do something for you. Okay, I found it. Let's see if I'm coming in. It's just another way. I don't think it played. Oh, didn't play. Maybe it is going to play. Maybe it is. I guess it wasn't. It's not coming in. Let me see why. Say. Share screen. Oh, I didn't share it. All right, start sharing. Jacka! Anyway. Hey.
Maybe it is going to play. I'm listening to myself. All right. Maybe it is. Anyway, hello, everybody. I should try to call somebody, but I'm not that type to get in trouble. Let's try this again.
Heading for the bedroom chair. It's just another day. Slipping into stockings, stepping into shoes, dipping in the pocket of her raincoat. It's just another day. At the office where the papers grow, she takes a break.
Hello there. Can you hear me? Hello there. I didn't know I dropped. Who's this on now?
Hey, Jerry. Hey, Jerry. This is Blaze.
Hi, Blaze. You got my message?
Hey, you just...
I didn't even know until I looked in chat that I had dropped.
Yeah, you just dropped.
Yeah, how you doing?
Good. I got a new number now.
We're back.
You probably didn't recognize it.
Can I get a 5x5 if you guys in the chat room? Instead of, well, I'll go look and see. I know I'm back. Let's see.
I can check on my tuner here quick. Yep, you're on.
Yeah, so anyway, I was ready to, so I'm glad you got my message, because I was asking about you last night during the show, and here you come riding. I sent for you yesterday, kid, and here you come riding up today.
Yeah, I spaced out the number. I've been trying to call you for the last 15 minutes. I had 706. And then I thought, no, it's 7:02 finally. And then I got through, and then that's right when you came back on.
Yeah, instead of answering your, I was calling back the server at the same time that you were calling, so I had to answer the server. I don't know. I couldn't answer your call because I had to go through the server and bring you in that way. I don't know. I'm happy.
I was calling the wrong number too. I got a new phone number, by the way. So.
Okay, I'll write it down in a second. Hang on, I'm going to try to share my screen and
sure.
See if it, because I think that's why I dropped or something. Hang on. Bada bing, bada boom. We're still here. Okay, we're still here. Because I was going to play this song for, I can find it now. Tell me if you hear this, Blaze. It talks about Paul McCartney talking. Let's see here. You hear that, right? You hear that,
yep,
right?
Yep, I can hear something. Yep.
Did I ever take you in my arms, look you in the eye, tell you that I do? Did I ever open up my heart, let you look inside? If I never did it, I was only waiting for a better moment that didn't come. There never could be a better moment. This one is lighting above the ocean. A god is riding upon his back. I'll calm the water and bright the rainbow. Paint this world to black. Did I ever touch you on the cheek? Say that you were mine. Thank you for the smile. Did I ever knock upon your door, try to get inside?
See, that song, I don't know, it always touched me, you know, because it's like.
That's the first time I heard it.
Yeah, that was the studio one, but I did find the one that, from live from 1989. Let me see what this one sounds like. And I just got to share it first. I'll share it in a second. This is actually because it's live. It's it was 1989, and I did go. I'm pretty sure. No, I didn't go to this concert, but I went to the one after that. I saw him in Vegas. But here we go.
Did I ever take you in my arms, look you in the eye, tell you that I do? Did I ever open up my heart and let you look inside? If I never did it, I was only waiting for a better moment that didn't come. There never could be a better moment than this one. This one, this one is gliding above the ocean, a god is riding.
I don't want to play too much because I'll get drove. But, that song is just always, to see him do it live is pretty bad. And that's when he was with Wings. But, I was a pretty much of a McCartney freak. Even when I came into Vegas, I bought a lot of his albums that I got somewhere. I don't know where I still have them, but I was pretty much more McCartney freak than John Lennon, but I learned to love his music too. Talking about the Beatles, you know what? What's new with you, Blaze?
Well, we're finally getting some good weather up here. It's been in the 70s the last couple of days, so that's been nice. Otherwise, it's been winter right up till a few days ago.
Well, it was
35. 34 degrees a couple days ago, and now it's 70, so that's nice.
I crashed out about 7 this morning, Pacific Standard Time, maybe a little earlier, and then I woke up about a couple times, but I got up about 4 o'clock, and I looked outside to get a drink of water through the kitchen. I just looked at my thermometer out under my shade, in my patio, and it was 90 degrees, so, and clear blue skies. But then it got windy. It got windy a little bit later tonight, or earlier.
Yeah, it was windy here, too. Seemed like.
That's a trip. But it was warm, so this is May. This is a good time to come to Vegas for the weather. It's not, it does get hot, but it doesn't stay hot all night. When it starts, that's July and August. Well, I'm in the doors a lot now, but I got used to no humidity and staying hot all night. Because I grew up in humidity, and now I can't stand it when it's hot summers, and if you take a shower, you go outside to do something, you're already sweating and perspiring. I'm not used to it. But live and learn, right?
Yep, I noticed since I started dialysis, I'm never too hot. I can't get hot enough. It seems like I'm always cold, no matter what the temperature is.
Do you take your temperature? That doesn't have anything to do with, I guess, feeling cold, huh?
No, it's just something with that process, I guess.
I wanted to ask you something. Last Friday,
My doctor's been waiting for me to come get a new A1C test. A1C.
Yep.
And he's kind of bitching at me because I missed a couple things that I was supposed to do at the diagnostic center where I've got to have a couple tests done in my chest or something. I don't know. So I rescheduled for that, and I finally talked to him on I wasn't at his office, but we had a phone appointment. He says, listen, you got to come see me the next time. No more phone calls. And I said, yeah, okay. And I said, and you got to come down here. You don't have to come down here with an appointment. Come to my office and get the blood work done, and then we'll go from there. Okay. So I went Friday, right? About 3:30 in the afternoon. I just woke up and I got down there and to his office. He wasn't, I don't know if he was there or not. But finally, this chick starts to do my blood, and she had 5 vials to fill up. I didn't fast, and my blood, she was filling the first, trying to fill up the first vial, and my blood was coming out slow like a son of a bitch, real slow. So she went to get her friend I said, take this, it hurts too. The way she did it, usually they don't hurt me, but kind of hurt. So she pulled it out, and she's going to do the other arm. I said, well, I didn't fast. And she goes, yeah, come back Monday at 8 o'clock. We'll pull you right in and out and drink a lot of water because your blood. So I never seen my blood extract that slow before. It was like syrup. It was coming up like thick like syrup. I tripped out, but I didn't question it, but it made me wonder do I got something now? But I didn't have any app. They just said come back and have you ever heard about that?
They say when you're dehydrated, that's happened to me a couple times.
Ah.
Where I was so dehydrated that they had to take it off with one of them them stabbers for checking your blood sugar. They had to try to take blood out of me doing it that way, stabbing me about 100 times in the finger trying to get blood. I said, this is ridiculous. You ain't going to sit and do this here all day. Well, that's the only way we can get it out of there.
Another thing that happened to me, I had fasted I didn't eat for like 3 days. And I just fasted that long sleeping. It was a pretty long time. So I get out my little AccuCheck to stab myself, put the insert in to draw the blood to give me the test, and I slipped it in the wrong way. I put it in the wrong way, and then I turned it around, and it started saying insert the little strip, insert. And I kept putting it in, and I can't get it to fix. It still has all my records of all the previous tests I've taken, but it's messed up. And so I was bummed out because I wanted to see what my test would be fasting that long, see how low it would. And I don't think I ate anything. I might have ate a little bit of ice cream. So because I woke up and I had cotton mouth. And so I went probably during my sleep, woke up a couple times and ate some vanilla ice cream and went back to bed. And then it doesn't work, and I'm so bummed out, so I got to take it with me. It's my previous primary doctor gave it to me. I did call him up and say, because he said, Jared, come by anytime you want. So I mentioned what I just brought to you, and they said, well, since you have a new primary doctor and a new type of insurance, we can't help you, Jared. But I got an appointment, so if I do that blood work and fast Sunday night, and I do my blood work anywhere between before 11 o'clock, and I go pick up my hearing aids at 11 o'clock appointment with my hearing aid doctor. So I'm kind of like, I'm booked solid in the morning to accomplish a couple things for the best of me, and that's what's up in Monday. I can't wait to see how these new hearing aids will. Then I don't have to go, huh? Speak up, huh?
Yeah, I bet you'll like them.
Yeah, and I think I got the batteries that you got to take out. If you don't take them out, they don't recharge or something. So I've got a bunch of batteries.
Really?
Instead of getting the other type that's a little bit more, it's a little bit more money, I think, that I wouldn't have to pay. I didn't have to pay nothing for this, I think. But it gives me a big supply of to replace the batteries. So I don't know. I'll find out Monday, and then I'll bring it to the next show about how what's going on and give an update about it. I hope that, it was over a month ago that I saw the hearing doctor, and he tested me all out, and then he told me what hearing aids that are affordable for me and that this insurance is covered. They're coming like 3,000. So that's what this one cost, I think. It's a little bit under 3,000. So it's totally covered. I don't have to put up any money. So I made sure of that, and here we are, you know. I'm a baby boomer, at the stage of life, 66 next month, kind of like reporting it live, my wellness on live TV. But I guess I've learned a lot, like through you, I've learned so much. So, like I said, I need to fast good, for Monday morning for that blood work. At least she said, make sure you fast and drink a lot of water, and we'll see what happens. Because I won't know the results till after I make the appointment, when I go there Monday, do the blood work, the appointment, blah, 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 and see what's up. But, I know what I was talking about going swimming last night, that I've been trying to say that I went started going swimming, and I procrastinated, like, I mean, just need to be slapped for a couple, 3 years or more, saying I'm going to go down to the pool and get in there and start losing, like, I need to lose about 30 pounds. That'll be my ideal weight. And I believe if I did that, I wouldn't have any, it would lower my blood sugar being losing that weight and still eating sweets. I don't know. Here it is. That's the future to pray tell. I don't know, please.
Yeah. Like I said, the best thing to do is get a treadmill. Go to a garage sale. See if you can pick up a treadmill for $20.
Something
you're going to have right at your house.
I did have one.
But you got it right at the house, and you can't get away from it. It's always there.
I know. I had one, though, but I said, it sucked so much electricity that it made my bill go nuts. So I said, man, I can't be on my feet anyway. So if I went swimming three times a week.
Well, I didn't think I could either, but after I did it, I was like you, where my legs were really bad. And I couldn't even walk a block without them hurting so bad.
Right.
But I just did it. And I walked a block, and the next day I walked a block and 10 feet, and then the next day a block and 20 feet. And I just kept doing a little more, a little more, a little more at a time, and now I can walk for hours,
Well, that's...
You just got to build yourself up to it.
How does it affect your electric bill?
Oh, it doesn't. I don't even notice it.
Well, I sure noticed it on mine. I said, man, no way. And I was turned on to just to store it for a friend, and I started using it. I said, come pick this up. It's not good. I'm going back. Shit, I'm going back 20 years ago.
Yeah, that's probably the old rot, might have had a bad one.
I don't know. But,
in it or something.
I don't know, but.
Because mine, I don't even notice
it. But if I go swimming, I'm not on my feet. I'll be swimming. Underwater, that's my thing.
Right. I guess where you and I are different. See, I'm blind and I couldn't drive, so it was hard for me to get to the YMCA.
Right.
So for me, it was easier just having something at my house that I could do all the time.
I follow you there.
Yeah.
So I, like I said, mine is different because, I don't know, and it takes on a lot of room, and I've got so much stuff in here now, but... That's not an excuse.
I know how that is. I just got rid of all my clutter in the fire. It's nice now. People keep coming over and telling me, don't buy all that bunch of shit no more. Leave it like it is. Oh, yeah. You can see around here.
What do they call it when you're a rat pack or a...
Yep.
You start...
And you just thought it was a house of clutter.
Not so much shit in the hallway, you got to turn sideways to get down to the head.
Yep.
But that's how it is. I got so much shit from projects outside.
Well, that's it. It
sucks.
You don't realize what you accumulate.
Yeah, and the ways I become procrastinating because of my health, that I don't do the projects, and it's just all that wood sitting out there and the stuff. It's always something. So,
yep.
And, you know, like I always say, I wish I had two of me at 18 years old. I could kick ass around here, you know?
Yeah.
And even just one person like me at 18 years old, fully fit and aggressive and, you know, but I don't have that. It's wishes were fishes. We'd all have a fry. I'd bring some tartar sauce and no one'd say why.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say, my buddy, you're talking about that, Gorilla Glue number 4. He just picked up a bunch of them seeds and he planted them. He said he'll find out in 6 weeks.
Oh, he ordered some.
Coming out, but he said they look really good so far.
Oh, so he ordered some Gorilla Glue seeds and he's doing the same thing, sprouting them.
Yeah, he's been doing this stuff for years, but he wanted to get some new kind of strains, you know. So.
Yeah, that Gorilla Glue is, I'm telling you, it's like back in the day, getting it through my friends, the black market, before anything was going on like it is today. Two hits, man, and you'd cough. And if you coughed, you got off. And by the time the doobie got down to, like, the roach, it'd be real oily. You know, you could see the resin in it. And any weed that I smoke, whether it's somebody bringing it down from Oregon, black market, or going to dispensaries, never. I don't see it because that's all I do is roll doobies. I don't see none of it gets like those old days when it get real, it'd get resiny and I don't see, maybe once in a while I'll see it do that. I'll make a blend and it kind of does it, but it's weird. It's weird how, so I'm hoping that these seeds that I just started today, just about an hour ago, I've got them soaking in some nutrient water in a glass, and I put the saran wrap over it, and I'm going to put it on my water heater in my water closet. And once they start to break open with a little sprout, I'll put them in the dirt with the moistened dirt and keep it wet and keep it in a dome, and it'll stay humid in there and they'll sprout. Or sometimes you can just put them on a wet napkin, and I've done it that way, and just wait, and they'll sprout that way. But I like to, I'm soaking them, and they're all floating right now on this water, in this glass, 4 of them.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm swirling it around and see if they'll drop. I guess sometimes it takes them a minute to, you know, a little time, put them in the water in the closet, and if they don't, hopefully they'll drop. That's telling you that they're still floating, and I just swished them. I might have to poke them, but I'm just gonna shut out.
Yeah, it happened.
So your friend, he's probably got different. He's probably got young sprouts coming up, and he's probably got plants that are flowering. He's been doing it at a minute, huh?
Oh yeah, he's been doing it for years, and I suppose he goes through 4 or 5 pounds a month. You know?
What's that?
I guess he goes through about 4 or 5 pounds a month.
He goes through that much to get and gets rid of it.
Yep.
Wow.
To his buddies and shit. He just sells it to.
Must have a whole room to grow in or something.
Oh yeah, he's got a big pole shed. He's got bloom rooms and all that shit.
Oh, so
operation.
He's
put some money into it and some time. I've tried, you know, like I could, my backyard and my greenhouse out in the backs, I got to cut all the trees to let more sun in, because I built it that way because it gets so hot here in the summer that I had the trees surround it, but they just need to be there. I need to go up and take some of the lower limbs off so it'll get a little more sun, the greenhouse. I haven't done that yet. I got all the tools to get up there and trim it, and I need to go cut all the palm trees I have that you know, I always keep them up, and I got to put them, stack them all together with all the thorns, you know, cut them and stack them and then tie them up and take them out to the street. I haven't done that in a minute, and God, the backyard just needs to be a lot of eucalyptus, dead leaves, and oh man, it's a mess back there. And I was thinking about calling like somebody that helps elderly people that are sort of handicapped like me, and see if there's any kind of like United Way or something like that to that will bring somebody to the house that'll do these things for me. Like, you know, because I can't do it myself, and shit, try to, you know, maybe in Craigslist if I advertise I need somebody, but then they're going to charge me or put a bid on it, and I don't, it's always something, you know?
That's the thing. I kind of thought of stuff like that, too, but then people told me, well, join a good church, you know, and they'll help. I go, I ain't going to join a church just to try to get help doing stuff around my home, you know?
I know, I know that that option's out there, but I feel you there, you know.
Yeah, I just hate to ask people, you know. It's nice, but,
How's Laura doing?
She's doing pretty good, I guess.
You guys are still tighter than a frog's ass, and that's waterproof.
Yeah, we...
That's an old saying, like, you guys are like good friends, or you guys are tighter than a frog's ass. That's what.
Yeah. Used to be another one, finer than the hair on a frog's ass or something.
I don't remember that one, but yeah. So.
Finer than the hair on a frog's ass.
So when the weather's starting to break out nice, do you try to go out and enjoy this, just sitting out in the, out on your balcony or your porch?
Yeah, I was out there sitting last couple of days because, like I said, it's been 70 the last couple of days. So it was a little windy yesterday, but I still sat out there for a few hours.
So, Blaze, you still getting the dialysis 3 times a week?
Yeah, got to do that.
Gosh, man. And Laura still... Laura still...
What's that?
Laura still helps you to make those appointments.
Well, we still go shopping once a week. She takes me grocery shopping, and we go out and have lunch together and stuff.
Well, to manage, and how do you manage?
Stay in touch, you know.
How do you manage to get to the dialysis? She doesn't help you no more?
No, I got a, through the county, I got a ride that.
Oh, they come in a bus and pick you up?
Yeah, in a van, yeah.
That's cool. That probably takes a little pressure off her and being friendships with
her. Oh, yeah. Yeah, because she doesn't live right next to me anymore. She's about 6-7 miles away now. So.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, she used to help me, but then she moved, and she lives about 7-8 miles away. So whenever we do something, you know, she's 20 minutes away, I suppose.
But so now I got that probably they come to your door and come help you get out the house and get on the ride to the dialysis. That's good.
Yeah, that's nice because it's early in the morning. You know, when I stayed with Laura, she took me to dialysis and she wasn't used to getting up that early and stuff. You know, and it was quite a thing for her. You know, to get up at 5:30, she goes, I ain't used to getting up this early, and then she'd take me into dialysis, and then she'd go home and get ready herself to do whatever, and then come and pick me up, you know.
That's when
10 o'clock.
Was that when they were fixing the apartment? So you were staying with her? And were you staying with her 6 miles away from your place? Or she was still living? Oh, I see. She had already moved, and then you
her and her husband built a nice house 7-8 miles away or whatever, and it's really nice.
Wow.
They got a house with everything they wanted, you know. So.
Kind of like custom.
Yep, they're pretty happy with it.
Wow, that's good. She's still a homebody, and he's the bread maker.
Yep. Yeah, he's one of them IT guys. He's always on the computer, you know.
Oh, I see. So, and your place is, how long have you been in there now since the fire? A month?
Yeah, a couple weeks, anyway, 2-3 weeks.
Wow. That's a trip. Do you still, do you still smell a scent of fire in there? Remember you?
Once in a while when I go by the cupboards where they're, I haven't got my cabinets yet. The Amish are still building them.
Wow.
And when I go over by there, I can smell it a little bit. That should go away when they put the new cabinets in.
I remember I was talking about you with somebody else, and they said, you know, Blaze, they were saying you were very fortunate that it could have been worse for you. And it's like, and I, myself, I just went in, I had something, I cooked some hamburgers for me and Boo. And I took all the patties out, and I still had it on low, the heat, but I didn't have, I kind of moved the pan halfway to the one behind it, so, and I didn't know I left the fire on, but it was on real low, and that's, that's like the second time that I've left something on, or I left something on and I forgot about it. I made a double boiler. I had a big pot that I put water in, and I had this soup that all was pureed, so I didn't want it to put it on the fire because it was so thick it would have crushed it out easy, right? So I put it in the double boiler, and I left it on, and I spaced it, man. I took off, and I came home. The house wasn't all smoky, but I could smell it. And so when I got into the kitchen, I said, oh shit, the water had was always long gone, and the inner pot that had the soup in it, the thick soup, I had to just take a ladle and just get all the stuff that wasn't to the bottom, you know, and the sides, it was all just burnt. A little bit got into my back of what I said. And then I had to soak it and scrape it with a spatula to get all, and then I finally, and I cleaned it all up, and it took me some work, and then I finally steel wooled it to get it really nice. So I got it back, that one that I burned up with the soup, but you know, shit, every time I do that, it usually costs me some time in the kitchen for the mistake I made. But I left, tonight I left it on and real low, and I go, damn, see, so that's, I'm not, you know, I can lose thought. I should have went right back in there. I might have went to the head. I might have went to the head tonight or something. Or I took the food in to my office, started being booted. I forgot about that pan and that little. So I know the feeling, what you're saying, and it ain't fun. So maybe my hearing aid will help me remember better. Don't start, Jerry. It won't be none. No. I don't know where Daryl is. I was trying to get him to call in. And Darren, I don't know if you remember him. He called in last night, and my nephew called in last night. And
I heard your nephew and Darren a little bit last night.
Yeah, I took a little break and let Darren and my nephew Jason, you know, go at it. So it's kind of nice when you have somebody ride a shotgun with you. In case I got to step away, and that just know they know my vibe and they just carry on. Dory used to be good at that, and a few other fellas that rode shotgun with me that just, when I don't say nothing, they just, I don't even have to say I'm going to the head or I got to do this. I'm just quiet, and they had the vibe to carry on with doing the show. Gave me a nice break because of the hours that I do. Tonight, yeah. I've been on since 1. It's 4:30. Is it 4:30? Yeah. So I still got another hour and a half to go, but tonight I might just drop out in 30 minutes and but you called in so it helps. But, you know, I'm just saying I have the time that the staff gives me to go that long, but sometimes I just puckered out and I take an early out because it's a long night. Or some nights it's so going on that shit, I don't want to stop with all the callers and the topics we get on and got on here in after hours. So it just, you know, it's day by day and whatever you feel. But I was going to, you know, Nighthawk used to come on late at night and he'd just call people in like Noreen or someone. They wouldn't say a damn thing. You know, they would snivel and say, what do you bring me in for? But if I did it, can't you message me before you bring me in here? You know, I'd get kind of a little
rant. You hit the boss, that's why you're sucking up.
Yeah, I guess so. Nighthawk could get away with it being Nighthawk, but Jer could. But, you know, it's live and learn, you know.
Yeah.
I'm a stinker, so I get in trouble, and I have to be taught the lesson to show everybody that not to do things, so that's the way it goes sometimes. What can I say? You know, I'm not, pretty much so, I'm straight up on the mic and carry on, but sometimes I get a little loose out there and
I don't want you doing that.
All right, I'll straighten up. But, what can I say? It's, I don't know. Silence of the Lambs. But, yeah, that one song was a trip, Did I Ever Open Up My Heart, Let You Look and Slide. If I never did it,
that
I was
only... That John McCarthy song?
Yeah, so, boo, well, you gotta go outside? Anyway, she's acting up, she just woke up.
She woke up from her napping, man.
Yeah, I got something about Janis Joplin since I was doing about the 27 Club with earlier Jim Morrison.
Yeah.
But here's one, because she's part of the 27 Club.
Yes.
This one's called Janis Joplin, the final 24, like the one I just played with Jim. Even Keith Moon has the final 24. Just looking at some of these, that this guy... let me see how this sounds, because I'll take a little break here, get stretched through tonight. Let's see. Tell me if you hear this place. And I want somebody to tell me,
come on! Yeah.
1970.
Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Janis Joplin, one of the 27 Club's final 24. Let's just chill out. Please, if you want me to stop it, just say, Jer, something draws your attention, okay? You know what to do.
Yep.
All right, here we go.
17. Janis Joplin is the undisputed queen of rock and roll.
It's a fact there had been no female superstar of rock before Janis came along.
The rule of thumb was, if it feels good, do it.
Famed as rock's wild child, Janis also hides a self-destructive, darker side.
No, I lost you, Jer. Lost sound. Can you hear me, Jer?
Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. We'll be right back after this message.
This is Thomas, a.k.a. a Mad Painter. I'd like you to join me Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for Open Canvas. Don't forget to bring an open mind.
Yes, folks, that's right. Bring an open mind to an open canvas. Again, that is Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. UFOs to government corruption. This is Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
I will defend myself against their tyranny. Number three is my radio broadcast. I'm squarely in front of the public all the time, and they all know what's going on.
For we are opposed around the world by a monolithic and ruthless conspiracy that relies primarily on expanding its sphere of influence.
Hello, my name is John Wayne. And I do a broadcast here at freedomslips.com, revolution.radio, called The Unequivocal Truth, DEFCON 1.
Freedom and fear are at war.
And folks, I assure you, we are in defense condition one, mission one, as we journey perilously through this paradigm that we currently reside in. And I ask that you join me every Saturday, 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, for the unequivocal truth, DEFCON 1.
We did not engage in conflict that was out of line with our mission.
Is it disloyalty? Is it treason to oppose the hands of tyranny? Never!
I will never send troops anywhere on a mission of that kind without telling them that if somebody shoots at them,